Well, hey, it's time for the very first Ask the Tech Guys for 2024. Coming up, a look at CES. Scott Wilkinson tells us what kinds of TVs to get ready for.
And I'm Micah Sargent, and we talk about a really important phishing scam you should be aware of involving Facebook Marketplace, Google Voice, and, well, what you need to do.
And is it possible to keep a calendar and address book synchronized between an iPhone and a Windows machine without using the cloud? We'll find out next on Ask the Tech Guys.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Ask the Tech Guys with Micah Sargent and Leo Laporte. Episode 2006, recorded Sunday, January 7th, 2024. Don't slow down in the diaper aisle. Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Delete Me. Have you ever searched for your name online and didn't like how much of your personal information was available? Delete Me's team is driven by a passion for privacy and a commitment to making it simple for customers to use. They help reduce risk from identity theft, credit card fraud, robocalls, spam, cybersecurity threats, harassment, and unwanted communications overall. We use Delete Me. We've been using it for more than a year to protect our company's security. So here's how we did it. First, you sign up, you submit some basic personal information for removal. Delete Me experts will find and remove your personal information from hundreds of data brokers, helping reduce your online footprint and keeping you and your family safe. Delete Me will continue to scan and remove your personal information regularly. This is important. It includes names, it includes addresses, photos, emails, relatives, phone numbers, social media, and property value, and more. Now, since privacy exposures and incidents affect individuals differently, their privacy advisors ensure that all customers have the support they need when they need it. Protect yourself, reclaim your privacy by going to joindeleteme.com/twit and using the code TWIT. That's joindeleteme.com/twit and using the code TWIT for 20% off. Well, hey, it's time once again for the brand new Ask the Tech Guys first show of 2024.
Yes, it
you
is
look
indeed.
So sharp, Micah Sargent.
You look very dapper, Leo Laporte.
I got a fade.
You did get a fade.
To match your fade.
Look at us. We're both faded. Faded
so the
glory.
Original fade really didn't look like this. It had a big afro on the top, right? And
yes.
So you looked like a pencil eraser or something. But this is a little bit more. I thought I'd be more with the kids because I knew that you were going to. So I thought maybe I'd look more youthful.
I quite like it. And
it's
I like it paired with your new glasses.
Yeah.
You're not wearing today, but.
No, I just thought they're really heavy. They hurt my nose.
Oh, do they really? Oh, no.
So I only wear them if I want to make a statement. Like, hi, I'm Mr. Magoo. This is the show where we answer your questions about technology at 888-724-2884. And if you're watching live, you can get in live right now. That's 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. 888-724-2884.
You can also visit us by going to call.twit.tv from the browser of choice. We suggest using your phone. If you go to call.twit.tv on your phone, you've got that microphone and camera right there on the device. You'll be connected to a Zoom room where you'll hang out. We ask that you please, you will find it somewhere, likely on the bottom of the screen if you are on any device, a little hand icon that says raise your hand. You want to tap raise hand or click raise hand. That's how we know that you actually have a question, that you're not just hanging out because you want to, which is totally fine. You can hang out.
I have a question.
Yes.
Who's Ray?
Ray?
It's Ray's hand. Why am I Ray?
Oh, Ray's hand. Oh, dear. I got to go.
That's a dad question.
I quit.
A dad joke hidden in a question.
Dear.
We want to hear from you, though. So
we do.
It's part of the fun of this show is the conversation, the back and forth, the interaction that we have with you, our fabulous fans. This is our last show before CES 2024.
Oh,
you and I will
goodness.
Be skying down to Vegas to stay in the presidential suite at the beautiful MGM Grand, where people will come to us with their gadgets and gizmos, a queue of 5,000 different people will walk into our room, show us the gadget. You each have 30 seconds, and we'll be done next year.
It's a great time. It's a lot like a show that I think's on NBC, where you're pitching
like
your gadgets
Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Hey, have you ever gone to? You've gone to CES.
Yes.
Yeah.
Three times. Hated it every time, but yes.
It's a hard show to go to. People love it. Tech journalists love it. because it's a chance for them to see other tech journalists, which is kind of pathetic. They don't get out much.
And I do kid. The first time I went, I really enjoyed it. I think it's
first
worth
time
having
is always fun.
Yeah, because it's just splendor and awe and all these wacky gadgets just as much as there are the normal things.
It's kind of like your first time in Vegas in general.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this is cool.
It's this
second
it's
time
like.
Is how quickly can I get out of here?
Ding, ding, ding.
Right?
Yes.
And CES is that times 1,000. It's in the Vegas Convention Center, but it's also in the other venues throughout the city. It's very hard to get around because there's, you know, there'll be about 150,000. I don't know how many it is these days.
Yeah, that's
at one point it was over 200,000. It's not just journalists, by the way. Some tech press, but mostly dealers. The whole idea of the consumer, what used to be called the Consumer Electronics Show, it's put on by the Consumer Electronics Association, which makes you think CES would be the Consumer Electronics Show. But no, they say it's not. It's just CES. It is put on for dealers, people who run, who runs a consumer electronics store anymore? I don't know. It's for Best Buy to come and see things. So it's a lot of things. It's car stuff. It's stereo stuff. It is certainly some computer stuff. Although the big computer companies kind of bowed out, like Microsoft and Apple,
because they've got their years own events. Ago.
They don't need to do this.
Yeah.
But really, and we're going to talk about it in just a bit because Scott Wilkinson will be joining us. What it really is a TV show. It's where you see the new TV technology, and I think that's of the broadest general interest. A lot of the stuff you're going to hear about, it goes January 9th through 12th. So you'll be hearing a lot. It's funny. The other thing is you'll be hearing a lot January 9th and 10th. The journalists go out this weekend. They're on their way out now for pre-show shows where companies spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to have like an event in a ballroom where the journalists are fed shrimp and there's a chocolate fountain.
Always a chocolate fountain.
And you go there and they get you there with the food. But then there's these little booths of only, you know, maybe 15, 20, 30 different high-paying people to get to the front of the line. Basically, it's a skip-of-the-line event because lazy journalists, and we are all lazy, cover, you'll see, what you'll really see is there'll be a lot of stories about the very first thing inside the door.
Yes.
At Showstoppers or Pepcom. Those are the two big ones. The very first thing inside the door, because they go, oh, okay, quick, get the camera over here. All right.
We'll do something real quick. And then
it's Joe Blow from CBS Chicago. And look at this. It's the amazing toilet robot. And then, or for 1 year, it was a happy brush that would, it was a haptic brush.
Oh, yeah.
1 year, it was literally a robot that would deliver toilet rolls to you. None of these really are real products. They're just there to get your attention and to get the local affiliate news attention. So you'll see that. And then a really intrepid reporter will go deeper into the event and see the other stuff. But mostly it's to get the shrimp. That's Saturday. That's Monday. Then Tuesday, the show doors open. And that is an event.
You'll
see on Instagram. You'll see videos of this. It's, you know, all the people are herded into the hall outside of the main entry, and then the doors open and they flood in. And I expect Scott will tell us, but usually Panasonic or one of the big TV companies, it wouldn't be Panasonic anymore, maybe Samsung, will have this giant video booth, because this is where the TVs all are. And you go through a tunnel of QLED TVs or whatever out into the thing. It's quite an event. It's quite fun. And then you try desperately to find something new and interesting.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is the same. This is the same. This is the same. Where's the new stuff? It often ends up being that quirky little stuff that's different.
And there is it used to be, they called it the International Hall. I don't know what they call it now, but they're offsite in another ballroom down the road. There's all the weird, quirky little stuff, the small booths that were cheap. That's where Dick DiBartolo goes.
Yeah.
So in a couple of weeks, we'll get his report of the crap. And there's fun stuff. For a while, last time I was there, which was in the year of our Lord 2020, right before COVID, it seemed to be everybody wanted to make a robot that would make something for you. Pizza, bread, ice cubes, chopped liver, whatever. And that was a big trend. So there's always a trend that'll be interesting. There's the trend story. Everybody, The Verge will do that. Everybody will do that. Usually nothing you see there is of great importance because, A, it won't be coming out until the end of the year, if ever. Really, remember, they're going there for the dealers who make their purchase decisions for the rest of the year. Most of it will be end of 2024, if ever. A lot of it's there just so that you can they can gauge interest.
Mm-hmm.
And if dealers say, well, we really don't want that automated potato peeler, then they won't make it. So it's a mixed bag. The TVs are the most important thing. Scott Wilkinson will tell us what to expect. TV wise, is there anything you'll be looking for in your, because nowadays the smart journalists just sit here
exactly
and let the poor lower echelon grunts do the work.
I actually, I'm planning on having on a great journalist who works in the smart home area on Thursday.
That will actually be the one area of big interest, because Matter's now been out for a year.
Exactly.
Are we going to see any movement in that area?
And that is what Jennifer Patterson-Tui of The Verge will come on and talk to us about. So thankfully, she's going to be there and is looking through it. And we're going to have like a trends discussion about honestly where everybody's putting their attention when it comes to the smart home right now and what we'll see there.
That'll be good. Next week, we will do our traditional Father Robert scams as much crap as he can at CES and then brings it back and puts it all on our table. And that will be that's always a lot of fun because Robert, he's a priest, right? So he goes around and he wears his collar.
Sample, please.
So people are, of course, whatever you'd like, Father. So he gets a lot of interesting stuff that he brings back. And he has very good taste, so he always picks something of great interest. So, we'll have CES coverage, but don't expect any great changes. One other thing I wanted to mention before we get into the questions is the passing of a kind of a legend in the technology industry. His name is Nicolas Wirth. I don't know if anybody knows that name. Programmers will, because he created 9 programming languages.
Holy moly.
But most importantly, Pascal. He was the creator of one of the early and most important programming languages, Pascal. Passed away on New Year's Day. He was almost 90. He is very important, I think, to anybody who is a programmer or uses software, which would be all of us. Pascal was one of the early languages on the Mac. In the very earliest days of the Mac, most people used Pascal. But it was also a great teaching language. So a lot of people learned it in school. People will remember Turbo Pascal, which was how Philippe Kahn and Borland got started. It was a very, very fast Pascal compiler. Algol, which was his first language, or one of his first languages, is the inspiration for almost all computer languages out there. Very, very much the inspiration of it. He then later did Modula, and you might remember that name. He worked at Xerox PARC briefly. He also, created an operating system, which nobody ever used, called Oberon. A brilliant guy, a legend, very influential in the computer industry, and Pascal was absolutely one of the first languages most of us learned. Nicolas Wirth passed away at the age of 89 this week. I know obituaries are kind of not, they're kind of bringing it down a little bit, but I like to recognize these computer pioneers.
Absolutely.
Because we're in the era now where many of the really early guys are fairly old, and it's good to recognize their accomplishments.
We wouldn't be where we are today without their contributions.
It's really true. Any stories catch your eye this week that you want to talk about?
I did want to quickly mention, if you were part of the Battery Gate settlement, that was the series of iPhones, iPhone 6, 6 Plus, 6S, 7, and the iPhone SE, the first generation. That was Apple having a setting, basically, that once the battery aged enough that the performance wasn't as good as it once was, what Apple would do is throttle the operating system, meaning that it would kind of slow down some of the performance in the interest of keeping the phone running for longer and making sure that it still worked and that you could use it. Because if that setting was not turned on, you would have an issue where sometimes your phone would just shut off. And, choosing between those two, you'd want to have the phone that keeps working. Unfortunately, because of the way that worked and because it wasn't immediately apparent that that's what Apple was doing, it wasn't until afterward that they kind of added a setting that let you turn it on or turn it off. There was a class action lawsuit And so that settlement was agreed upon in March of 2020. Apple agreed to pay $500 million in the settlement. And you had until October 6th of 2020 to file for your claim in the lawsuit.
So it's too late if you say, hey, I want that $92.
Far too late if you want it. Yeah.
Shoot.
But those of you who did file, you should be on the lookout. The first folks have been getting their payouts of $92.17.
I'm really surprised.
Yeah. Usually these payouts are like $4 a piece.
I was once part of a class action lawsuit against a snack called Pop Chips.
I heard of that.
And they won, and I got a free bag of Pop Chips. And so pretty much that's my standard for class action lawsuits is you basically get a bag of Pop Chips.
That's so
congratulations.
Funny. I can't remember the biggest settlement I got, but it was maybe
small.
$12 at the most. So I was kind of surprised at $92.17.
That is really large.
And
so would you say that was all that and a bag of chips?
All that and a bag of chips.
What is happening today? And for folks who had maybe an iPhone 6, an iPhone 7, an iPhone SE.
I did. I had all of those.
And the iPhone 6.
$92 for each one?
For each one. Yeah, you could file a claim for each
of them.
Now
that starts to add up. That's almost a new iPhone now.
And some people could have made as much as $1,000 is what I saw. So,
but again, you had to do it.
Yes. This is only us letting you know. Be on the lookout for your payments
for your
if
check.
You did file the claim.
Your check's on it's in the mail.
Yeah.
I forgot if I filed a claim.
I can't remember if I did either.
Because I did own all of
them. I usually don't go through the trouble of filing the claims because it's not worth it. You get a bag of Pop Chips.
Do you think I feel bad? Is it wrong for me to kind of feel bad for Apple? I don't think. So the real question is, did Apple do this maliciously to force you to buy a new phone?
Right, which is no.
Or did they slow it down because they wanted to preserve what was left of your dying battery?
Right. And honestly, when Apple did the, because remember, this went to a settlement. It did not go through all the way. And when Apple agreed to pay the $500 million settlement, they continued to deny any wrongdoing in this.
I mean, it's hard to feel sorry for a $3 trillion
exactly.
company. But I kind of do. I think they did the right thing.
I think they did the right thing. Exactly.
They didn't do it maliciously. They don't need to push people to upgrade their iPhones.
Right. Exactly. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
It's
going to be a tough year. 2024 is going to be a tough year for Apple, for all the big tech companies. Both Europe and the U.S. are looking hard at all of their practices.
Very hard, yeah.
And I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of action.
It's ramped up, apparently. We talked about that a little bit on Tech News Weekly as well. And I think Apple, you know, has been focused a lot on the EU, but now the U.S. is also looking and going, okay, it's going to be an interesting year for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, as long as we're talking refunds, Logan Paul has promised refunds for those of you who foolishly bought into his Crypto Zoo NFT animal collection, but he's not going to give you the money if you sue him.
Wait, so is it like a sign, you have to sign to say I won't sue you? Or is it one of these, if you tell me on Twitter, on X, that you won't sue me, then I'll give you your money back?
He's personally committing more than $2.3 million, which shows you, by the way, how much money there is to be made as a YouTube influencer. $2.3 million to buy back the NFTs purchased through CryptoZoo. Your claims have to be submitted online until February 8th. I never made any money from the project. In fact, the opposite is true. I was highly disappointed that game was not delivered. Okay, fine.
It was a game?
I don't even understand.
So you would buy.
So there was a very well-known crypto game called Crypto Kitties,
mm-hmm.
where you would breed kitties. You'd buy a couple of kitties. You'd breed a new kind of kitty, and then you could sell it. And the idea, of course, it's all.
Sometimes
it's all
I just
a con
really
game
hate
based on your greed, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to buy these kitties. I'm going to breed them, and I'm going to make $1 million. So it was the same thing. You would buy a base egg or a base animal, breed that animal, and then create a hybrid that was also an NFT that you then could sell to the next sucker and make and profit. They are not going to buy the hybrids. They're only going to buy the base animals. So. Any NFTs that Paul, in his sole discretion, deems ineligible will not be returned.
His sole discretion?
My sole discretion.
It's just like, okay, so every single one of them. Sorry.
Don't sue me, man. Anyway, it's kind of, I thought I, since we're talking about,
yeah,
that's that there's an Apple and Logan Paul in a nutshell.
Did you see that that huge write up? I wish I could remember from who it came. From whom it came. It was about Web 3 being everything this year, because Web 3 was going to solve the problem.
I saw that write up. It was by the guy who invented Web 3 and is the venture capitalist who has invested most of the money into Web 3. It was a VC, and I've forgotten his name, but yeah, no, I bookmarked that as well, because it's kind of funny to see them. It's very much like all these other things. Web 3 is kind of a blockchain based web, and the investors in it are desperate to get you to buy into this concept, because otherwise they're left like Logan Paul holding the bag. It was, you know, his website is AVC, because he's a VC. Actually, it's Mark Andreessen who really, I think, did the biggest investments in Web3, and his company, Andreessen Horowitz. Fred Wilson, that's what it is. His company is very much promoting it as well. I don't see a need for Web3. I'm not sure what problem it solves.
I agree.
Yeah. Let's wait for Web4. What do you say?
Woo, Web4.
Yeah.
Or even Web 3.2.
Oh, that'll be good.
So, it won't crash as many times.
We have wasted enough of your time with our top news stories of the week. I like doing this, though.
Me too.
We used to always do this on the Tech Guy show. I called it the Sunday sermon. Mm-hmm. But now it's a
hallelujah.
Now it's more like the Sunday marathon. Mr. John Ashley, who should we? We don't have any calls in the Zoom.
No, we have calls.
Oh, I see.
Calls.
I'm not going to pick up Dirk Diggler, if you don't mind.
I am going to pick up one person.
Okay.
Should I points do a Google search? Or?
Points. No, don't do it.
Okay.
Points for obscure references. Who do we want to start with?
I'm going to call a wireless
caller. Wireless caller. So we're going to pick you up. You press *6. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And then you'll be unmuted. And then you can announce in bold staccato voice your name, first name, and city.
Welcome.
Can you hear me, Leo and Micah?
Beautifully yes, done. What's your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, Jay from Wapakoneta, Ohio.
Jay from Wapakoneta. Hi, Jay.
You know our most famous former resident of Wapakoneta. Anybody guess?
I know the name. Is it Lou Gehrig?
No, more famous than that.
More famous than Lou Gehrig.
Than Lou Gehrig, it's got to be Calvin Coolidge.
Oh, absolutely. Nope. Very historical. Somebody in Zimbabwe would know this name.
I don't know. Who?
You're going to kick yourself, Leo.
It's
Neil Armstrong.
Oh, I am going to kick myself. The great Neil Armstrong. Yeah, first man on the moon.
Yes.
I love Neil Armstrong. Of course, he was eventually your senator from Ohio, so I should have known that. You're right. If this were Jeopardy.
No, that was John Glenn.
I just lost
Leo,
double Jeopardy.
John Glenn.
That was John Glenn, I know. What am I saying?
Yeah.
Neil is this never a became, trivia call?
Neil never, he became a professor. He never became a politician. Bully points for him for that.
Yeah. Good old Neil Armstrong, Wapakoneta, Ohio.
How cool. That's really cool. Have you been to the museum there?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Had the 50th anniversary, big doings here in Wapakoneta. We're not very big, but gosh, it was just a great time.
The
great
Armstrong
experience for sure.
Museum, currently closed for construction. They're renovating the lobby.
Huh?
You're right. He's more famous. In my mind, he's also up there with Magellan. And
yeah,
the great explorers, Vasco da Gama. I mean, he really, he deserves a lot of credit for being, when we look back in hindsight, that was a very brave thing to do, to go up in that tin can with the most primitive 1969 technology.
Yeah, that bravery, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, what can we do for you, sir?
And what he did to overcome and everything was just amazing how he approached it.
Really an inspiration. And humble. Yeah. He never, you know, he didn't buy a mansion or anything. He was a very humble, real person who.
That's true.
Yeah, and I think the very bad movie that Damien Chazelle made about him, I think didn't do him justice. First on the Moon. But there are some much better movies about Apollo 11 that you should watch. Not that one.
Right.
What can I do for you?
Right. So my question for you is, I keep an events or a journal for every day. Just write it down in a calendar, and I've done it for years and years and years.
I brought mine. But
I'd like to. What's that? Oh.
I brought mine today. Yeah.
But what I'd like.
And here's the pen and the paper.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, what I'd like to do is put it in like a document, Word document form.
Yeah.
So that, I can share it with people. And I'm wondering, is there a way I can use, and I'm on my phone right now with my earbuds. I got an Android Google 6 Pro.
Yeah.
Can I use my phone to transcribe it into a document?
How good's your handwriting?
And not use like a headphones or not a microphone, but use my phone.
Oh, you want to speak it into
the computer.
Oh, you want to speak it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
And you want to transcribe it? Yes.
Yeah, just speak it in there and make it a document, a Word document.
Android does that really, really well with the built-in voice recorder on. You have a Pixel?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you're in luck. Because, eventually these Google capabilities will filter down to the other manufacturers. But right now, the Pixel has a very good voice transcription capability built right into its voice recorder. You could turn on the transcription. You could talk into it. You could, I wish they had an action button like Apple does, because then you would just push the button and be like a voice recorder, and it would automatically get transcribed. Mm-hmm. But it's a very simple thing to do. You launch the voice recorder, you turn on transcription, it'll transcribe as you speak, so you can, if you want, you can look at it. Okay. Here's what I use it for. I record Jeopardy, but I don't record the show. I record me answering Jeopardy. And then later I go through it to see how well I did. I score myself. So, and that's just right on the phone.
Yeah.
It's a very easy thing to do. It does a great job with transcription. You're set. That's built into the Android phone.
But my question is, can I do that into my computer on a Word document, not just on my phone? But
you want to do it on the desktop as well.
To the computer.
Well, here's what I would do. I would
utilizing the phone.
Yeah, I would use your phone. I would have it do on the phone. And then it's a text document, which you can then email,
move to your computer,
copy, paste, whatever, to your computer, and then put in a Word document if you really want to. I don't, it still annoys me when I get Word documents from companies and stuff. It's like,
it's proprietary.
Microsoft says, no, our format's not proprietary. It's proprietary. And so, really, you can read it if you have Pages, but it's not going to be the same. I think Word is a bad choice. I think send it out as a text file is the best because everybody can read
.txt.
That. And if you really want formatting, there's other choices. Yeah. But so you'll get that file on your phone, and then you can easily transport it anywhere you want.
Sure. Can I ask something else?
Sure. Of course.
So in that same regard, I've got my journals, probably since, 1998 or so. So every year.
Oh, it's so good.
And what I'd like to do, and I love Excel spreadsheets. Now, I'm not saying this is what I want to do, but the concept is if you think about a spreadsheet, the first column, let's say, would be 1998. And then the first row below that would be like January 1. The next row would be January 2, January 3. And then the second column would be 1999, January 1, January 2, January 3, all the way down.
Yeah.
And all the way across for all the years. So I could look from, January 1 of 98 to 99, to just right across.
What do you want in the cells?
I can do it in spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's easy. But what do you want to put in the cells?
Well, that's the thing. My journal.
You want the text from your journal.
For that day.
Would you?
Maybe not a spreadsheet. I get that's not probably going to work in a spreadsheet, I guess.
Well, no, you could do
something else, some other program.
No, you could do it. So, of course, you know, if you use Excel, it's very easy to generate those headings and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. The cells is the real trick. Mm-hmm. If your handwriting was very good, you could optical character recognition it. You could OCR it, and it would then give you.
Oh, Lord, handwriting.
Yeah, nobody's handwriting is that good, I'll be honest with you. So what you want to do then is put a picture of each page, yes?
Oh, but you can't sort that, though. You can't, filter or search it.
No.
You'd have to do the hard work of going back and either typing it out, or you could use the transcribe feature again and start reading back your journals.
I'm going to show you the program I use for this, by the way, which I really like, and it's free. It's open source. It's called LogSeq, LogSeq. And by default, it does a daily journal. And it's completely searchable. You can actually, if you want, create a whiteboard, flashcards. It will also give you, and this is kind of what I think you're thinking about, this is the graph view of every day. And I could see which day links to which other days. So it is kind of what you want to do with a spreadsheet, only even smarter, I think. And it lets you...
So just visually to see the day... Next to the day, next to the next year's day. You can just
you could organize it. You could also organize it that way. You can absolutely organize it that way.
Okay.
I think it's better than a spreadsheet for this. You could put images in. The easiest thing would put an image in and then put a few keywords. Mm-hmm. So you're manually still doing this, but you're going and you're going to say a few keywords so it's searchable. So like, this is the day I got married. This is the day I bought a new car. This is the day I decided to stop eating trans fats or whatever, and then you could just put in the keywords on this. One of the things I like about LogSeq, they do something called backlinks. If you do a number sign in a word, it creates a page of all the references to that word. So now I have a page called trans fats, which has all the references to that page, or you can put it in wiki style, double brackets, I'll do autos. Mm-hmm. So I want to have every reference to autos. And then, in fact, I do have a few pages, if I click that in my thing refer to autos. So, and I can also do a search, but, so I could search for autos or search for trans fats, and then you'd be able to do it as well. So it's a very...
interesting.
This is a great program. It's free. I give them on their Patreon a few bucks a month so I can synchronize across everything. Runs on iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, and Linux. It's private. There's no centralized storage. You store it all locally. And what I really like is you store it in plain text markdown files.
Yep.
So those files, even if if this product goes away, those files will be readable by dozens of other markdown compatible programs. So this is
okay.
This is,
will you have links in it then? Show notes.
Yeah, we'll put LogSeq in the show notes. I think it's just LogSeq, I'm sorry, SEQ.org. Let me look just real quickly.
Okay.
But it's .com. LogSeq, SEQ.com. And it's designed, this is a whole category of note-taking apps. I talk about this a lot. They call them personal knowledge management systems, or PKMSs. And the theory, the reason people have started taking to do this is if you put all your stuff in a blob that is somehow indexed and interlinked, it helps you generate new ideas by saying, well, you know, let me, like, for instance, take notes on the books you read. Let me see all the books that talk about death and some ideas different authors have had. And it helps you then create some new ideas around that. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of journaling, isn't it? And of keeping all of these logs, is kind of taking your history and getting some understanding from this in aggregate. And so this really is what these PKMSs are all about, is helping you do that. And I think that for my money, nothing. LogSeq is the best. I think it's really good. There are a lot of other choices. A lot of people use something called Obsidian. And then Apple has recently, and I think bravo to Apple, added journals to iOS starting in iOS 17.2. But what's more important than the fact that they have that app
are the integrations that it has with other journaling apps so that you can be prompted based on the activities that you have on
your device. It has an API. So, for instance, the journaling app I really like and use all the time, which is on iOS and Android and also has a web interface, is called Day One. It's owned by the folks who do WordPress Automatic. And what Day One will do is it notices everything you've played, every picture you've taken, every place you've gone. Mm-hmm. So anytime you want to, and this is using also Apple's API. So anytime you want to add something, you can look at the suggestions. I don't know if you have the over the shoulder shot. There it is. Let me do that again, what I just did. So let's say I want to add a new entry. I do plus, and then there's this button, and this is using Apple's API. So this is using the journaling suggestions API. It sees places I've been, people I've talked to, exercises I've done, walks I've done. And so you could pick any of those and say, oh, yeah, let me talk a little bit more about this restaurant I just ate at. And so it really is a nice way. You can also put in, and I've put in prompts for things I want to record, like a gratitude journal. I like to keep track of things I'm grateful for. So I can actually have it prompt me. You can add prompts and says that say every evening, okay, write down three things you're grateful for today. This is a really nice practice, I think. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go digital. So that's called Day One. It's available on your Android phone. And that's not free. But Android will, I'm sure, copy Apple and do this kind of... Because your phone is keeping track of everything you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So
So use it.
Right. Use it. Take advantage of it. It's a really nice thing to be able to say.
Do you think that using one of these systems, can I talk into it to transcribe
you
my
sure
past events?
Yes, I can. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, that'd be an easy way to go back through your journal. And actually, what you could really do is with the paper journals is just open the phone and say, okay, January 5th, 1969. We're getting ready for Apollo 11
that's what
launch.
I'm trying to do.
We're all excited about Neil, our hometown boy, going to the moon. And you transcribed it. You'll do a better job than any OCR could do.
Absolutely. Yep.
I'm a big fan of these systems.
Well, I appreciate that.
That's the only negative is that I have 15 of them. I do. There's something about
that's the problem. There's so many choices, so many things out there,
and you don't want to have too many because you don't want to
figure out where did I put it.
But one of the reasons I still use a paper journal is there's something about the physical process of handwriting that's so valuable. So what I actually do is I take a picture of these pages, put them in Day One.
Nice.
So at least I have them there. And that works out pretty well. Mm-hmm. Day One and many other journaling apps also have OCR. And even a little bit of OCR is good because it gives you some indexes, right? It may not get it right, but at least it's going to have some.
A few keywords it might pick up on. Yeah. Yep.
Sure.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Great question.
Why, thank you.
And thanks for the trivia.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Trivia question for us. Now I got to go visit the museum, the Armstrong Museum.
Yeah, and then check out the Temple of Tolerance. You would love that.
The Temple of Tolerance.
Google that. Temple of Tolerance.
Wow.
Temple of Tolerance.
Wow. Wapakoneta's got some stuff going on in the world. Wow.
Well, not much, mister. Not much.
I'm a fan of tolerance. So if there's a temple, I'll join it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, nice to meet you.
You'll enjoy that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
You too.
Take care. Yeah. Here's an article about the Temple of Tolerance on roadsideamerica.com. An artist hippie enclave, but it's not. It's in the backyard of a suburban home.
There's no bullying.
No bullying in the Temple of Tolerance.
There are a wedge between human beings.
It's, you know what I love? And in fact, sometime it'd be fun to drive all over America and see these, like the Watts Towers, like the Temple of Tolerance, a place where a single human has said, I am going to build something that will outlast me. You know, I'm going to build my own cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. All right. We took a lot of time to do that. Let me take a break because I know Scott Wilkinson is waiting in the wings, and I want to hear what he has to say about the TVs that we will see this week at CES.
Woo!
That should be very interesting. Our show today brought to you, and when I say brought to you, I mean quite literally, brought to you by Cashfly. If you download our shows, you're downloading them from Cashfly, our content delivery network, or CDN. For over 20 years, Cashfly has held a track record for high-performing ultra-reliable content delivery. And I'm the poster child, I can tell you, because we've been using it for more than a decade. Cashfly serves over 5,000 companies in over 80 countries. Organizations consistently choose Cashfly for scalability, reliability, and unrivaled performance. With Cashfly, you get ultra-low latency video streaming that can deliver video to more than a million people at the same time. Lightning-fast gaming, delivering downloads faster, zero lag, glitches, or outages. If you've got a website, you'll love the mobile content optimization, which offers automatic and simple image optimization, so your site loads faster on any size screen. You get flexible month-to-month billing for as long as you need it. And then once you know what your billing should be, you get discounts for fixed terms. Design your contract. That's the bottom line. That's what we did when you switched to Cashfly. Oh, by the way, with Cashfly's elite managed packages, you get the VIP treatment. Your dedicated account manager will be with you from day one, ensuring a smooth implementation and reliable 24/7 support when needed. These guys are innovators. A lot of other CDNs copy them. Cashfly's got the engineers, the talent, the brains to do it right, delivering rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Join Cashfly, the world's fastest CDN. We're such happy partners of Cashfly. Jumpstart your journey with Cashfly with a complimentary first month or give it a whirl with a free 5 terabyte account. Just go to cashfly.com/twit. As I always say, bandwidth for Ask the Tech Guys brought to you by Cashfly at cachefly.com/twit. Thank you, Cashfly. Scott Wilkinson is on the horn with us, our home theater geek, host of the Home Theater Geeks show in our club. Hello, Scotty.
Hello, Leo. Hello, Micah.
Hello. I have a very important question for you.
Yes.
Have you ever played the Darth Vader march on the tuba?
I personally have not.
I bet it would be so funny.
But it would be great.
It would be a little more. Who needs a tuba?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
For Scott.
Even better, arrange it for a group of tubas.
Oh, my golly.
Now we're talking.
That's got to exist somewhere. I'm going to have to search.
It's got to exist somewhere.
I mean, that's such an obvious thing to do. So yeah. I say that because my socks feature Darth Vader today, the 49ers version. Because of
the 49ers version of Darth Vader.
Yes, so we are big Niners fans in the LaPorte household. So, Scott, do you have your pedometer all oiled up and ready to go?
Oh, no, I'm not going to CES this year.
That'll be the first time in how long?
Well, I didn't go during the pandemic, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't been since because, you know, the COVID's still out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting worse.
Yeah, and my mom's nursing home is still out there.
Yeah, my mom's nursing home. Everybody got COVID except my mom.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Well, lucky her. Good for her, yeah.
The good news is now with Paxlovid, even these seniors usually do fine. I mean, they can survive it, but still, yikes.
I would rather not get it in the first
place. Let's not get it in the first place, exactly.
Thank you very much. So I decided not to go. However, my good friend Mike Heiss is going. And he is going to come on to the podcast, after the show.
Wonderful.
And talk about everything he saw there.
What do you expect? I remember a few years ago, and it was funny because you would come on the radio show saying, I can't tell you, but there's going to be a big advance in TVs. And we were talking at that time about QD OLED, which is to this day the best TV technology you can buy in the
stores. Best flat panel TV technology available. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything like that this year?
Well, nothing revolutionary like that. We're going to see evolution of QD OLED, certainly. I expect we now are in the second generation from Samsung and Sony. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see the third generation introduced.
Okay. What would make it better?
Better processing.
Oh, yeah. That's something we should mention.
Which is already really good.
Yeah. We should mention that your TV is really a multiple thing of components, and it's basically a computer. Of course, there's the panel, And when we talk about QD, OLED, or OLED, or LCD, or LED, that's the panel technology. But in order to put something up on that screen, you have to have a computer built into the television.
Yep.
And so there's a processor, there's RAM, and there's software. And that makes a big difference, right?
Oh, yeah. Huge difference. Huge difference. It's really the whole ballgame other than the panel technology itself. And Sony generally has the edge on processor technology. Samsung's no slouch. LG's no slouch. They're all really, really good. I expect to see also from LG. I haven't seen anything to indicate that LG's going to introduce a QD OLED. Now they might. I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow, actually. They're banking on conventional OLED.
Interesting.
And I did see a press release that was issued before the show that said, you know, their newest generation of OLED is going to increase brightness and, you know, make OLED closer to LCD in that respect. They have a new technology, new as of last year, called Micro Lens Array, MLA, which puts tiny little lenses in front of the OLED subpixels and increases brightness that way, along with processing. But we'll see the next generation of processing. One thing that we'll certainly see that you will not be surprised about is the predominance of AI.
Oh, I'm so glad you're talking about this, because just on Thursday, I had the opportunity to talk about the new TVs that Roku is coming out with, and one of the big features they're talking about is the use of AI for individual picture quality for what you're watching. So every time you watch some new content, that the picture is tuned specifically for that. And I had to know what you think about this, because this feels like it could be as bad as that motion smoothing feature that we all end up turning off on our parents' televisions.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if I myself would turn it off.
How does it work? What is it aimed at doing?
Well, it's analyzing the image on the screen at any given moment, and it's automatically adjusting color, brightness, contrast, all this stuff to supposedly optimize the picture quality. The TCL is talking. I think Roku.
Roku's making their own now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Well, they all have AI processors now.
Oh okay.
TCL, LG, Samsung, Sony, Roku.
Should anybody consider a Roku TV? It sounds like kind of a. Well, who makes them, first of all, I guess?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think anybody knows. It's a mystery.
You know, it could be that, it's undoubtedly one of the Chinese companies.
Right.
So it could be Hisense or TCL. That's what I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, TCL offers Roku TVs.
Yeah, I was going to guess it was probably TCL, and they just kind of did a little swap there with...
Let me ask ChatGPT who makes Roku TVs.
You ask ChatGPT, and I'll continue to ask Scott.
Good idea.
We can hallucinate. Yeah,
I'm kind of... let me give you my cynical take on this.
Please.
I think, because we know that a lot of television manufacturers subsidize the cost of the television through ad tracking or through watch tracking, essentially seeing what content you're viewing. Yep. I think that this AI stuff is one more reason to either trick or convince people into connecting their television to the internet, keeping that connection going.
Right.
Because they're talking about how not only is it analyzing the actual picture that's coming through, but there's talk of like metadata that it's picking up on. It's picking up on what's being sent to say what kind of content this is. And the only way that can happen is if there's a connection there. So I really think it's just more of an opportunity to keep you connected to the internet instead of doing what we always suggest here, which is don't connect your smart TV to the internet.
Correct. In fact, Mike Heiss, I was talking to him before he left today to go to CES, And he was saying that, there's a pretty big push to move away from the term smart TV to the term CTV for connected TV.
Yeah.
This is going to be a big push in the industry for people to connect exactly what you're talking about, to connect their TV to the internet, not only for, you know, apps like Netflix and what have you, but as you say, to utilize AI in the cloud, even maybe, but certainly to monitor what you're doing in order to, quote unquote, optimize your experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what it really is optimizing their data collection.
Yeah. Did ChatGPT have an answer for you, Leo?
No, no. In fact, unfortunately, if you ask or search for who makes Roku TVs, they'll give you all the people who make TVs with Rokus built in.
Yes.
Far as I can tell, no one has speculated on, I imagine it would just be a little detective work to figure out where.
Well, you know what? Mike's there. He's on the ground. And he's undoubtedly going to go see Roku TVs if they are there, like in a booth or something. I will ask him to sleuth around.
It doesn't really matter who makes them. I guess the issue is, are these good TVs?
Right.
Are they less expensive? Yeah. They have a Pro line and a regular line. Are they less expensive?
Yes. Well, the Pro line is new this year.
Right. That's the one with AI, so-called smart
with picture. This AI business,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there are 1,500 at the top end. But yeah,
they've got
now
a Pro series as well as their
Roku
quote
Select
regular
Roku
series.
Plus.
Well, Roku Plus and Roku Select right. are the other two brand, the other two series. Right. The Pro series will come in 55, 65, and 75 inches. Pricing has not yet been announced, but there have been some rumors that perhaps even the 75 inch is going to be in the $1,500
range. Which is very inexpensive compared to the other guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe Seriously. One of the ways they make up the difference in profit is by spying on you and selling that information to data bro.
Exactly.
That's what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
So,
but you know, maybe that's worth it to you. Maybe you don't care. I don't care. And maybe if you don't care, that's not a bad thing. You could also buy these TVs and not connect them, although then you wouldn't buy a Roku TV without.
I'm more curious to see if Roku will continue to partner with other companies and have a TCL Roku TV or a Hisense Roku TV.
This is a very good question. And Mike will tell us.
Yeah, I'd love to hear
I've heard rumors that TCL may be kind of moving away from that, at least in their top end.
Yeah.
Wired says, according to our Discord, a little research from Joe, that both TCL and Hisense make the Roku TVs, which would kind of make sense.
That makes sense.
The two Chinese manufacturers.
If Roku's willing to pay more to TCL and Hisense, then to get their branding on the front instead of beside, that makes perfect sense.
Roberto Baldwin, our good friend Roberto Baldwin, writes in Wired that it's a result of a partnership between the Roku people and the major TV manufacturers, TCL and Hisense.
Yep.
So Roberto probably knows. Yeah.
Yep,
this was
exactly.
from last year when they first announced it. Of course, actually, wait a minute. Oh, no. This is from 2014.
Oh, that's that must have been the TCL Roku TVs.
That's
then.
The other
right,
ones.
It must
yeah,
have
never
been.
Mind. Forget
must
that. That. See, this is why the ChatGPT can't give me a good answer either.
Yeah
right.
We don't know,
right.
I think, is what it boils down to.
10-year-old information.
And really, all that matters is it worth buying them?
Yeah.
And
I have
you
to say, I'm
that.
Still a fan of getting, I have the Samsung QD OLED, absolutely best screen, really gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
My LG OLED, still a very, very nice screen. I think those two companies and their OLEDs are still probably the way to go. And Sony, throw Sony in, of course.
Sony into the
if
mix.
If you've got the They're, scratch.
They have less of the market for some reason, but they make an excellent TV that typically wins the annual flat TV shootout the Value Electronics puts on.
So, in other words, it's going to be another one of those CESs, and they're more common than not, in which there's nothing really huge to announce, but just incremental improvements.
Correct. That's what I'm expecting. Yeah. Now, who knows? Maybe we'll be surprised. Well, tomorrow is the big press conference day, starting at 8 a.m. with LG.
And I don't know. I'm going to, if Mike is not in our Discord yet, I see him all the time. I used to see him all the time in the IRC. I will send him a complimentary club membership because we would like to get him into our club Discord so that he can talk with club members about what he's seeing and so forth.
Yes.
So I'll send you the information and you can.
Please do. And I'll forward it on to him. Yeah.
Thank you.
We're going to be recording that show shortly after he gets back. Broadcast. It'll probably be two parts. I mean, CES is a big show, obviously, as you know.
Yeah.
So we're going to split it into two parts. There isn't that much, generally, there isn't that much audio news at the show.
Well, I got an email from Denon saying, you'd love our new AV receiver, and then I saw it was $6,000, and so...
Whoa!
I closed the tab quick before I got tempted. So there are people still making high-end audio components, I guess.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember, some years ago, the Venetian Hotel hosted several floors of high-end audio.
That's right.
It's all gone. Oh.
Not anymore, huh?
Not anymore. It's gone. It's, there's nothing like that there anymore.
You could thank Apple and its white earbuds for that. I think there's a whole generation that's the state of the art in hi-fi, and they're perfectly happy with that. And so I imagine the market for so-called high-fidelity components is dwindling.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're all getting our music on our phones these days, and
it's true.
It ain't
it's
bad. True. I gotta say, it ain't bad.
Well, if you have a good enough earbuds,
And the higher-end earbuds from almost all the manufacturers actually sound pretty good. What do you listen to for headphones these days?
Well, when I'm out walking, I listen to a pair of One More, the numeral one and then M-O-R-E, true wireless earbuds. They're called, they actually have the brand or the model name Stylish.
Oh.
But I love One More earbuds in any event.
They're great price for performance, aren't they?
Great price for performance. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. So, and they I think they still make some wired ones, but, you know, phones these days no longer have a wired output.
Right.
I mean, you can get a dongle that plugs into the charging port of a phone and converts it into audio, so you can do it that way. But these were One More true wireless earbuds are great. I finally
gave in and just went with the AirPods and AirPod Pros, and because
are they good?
They're fine. They're not the best sound, but the ecosystem is so complete, and the adaptive sound and the transparency and the noise cancellation and working with easily with the iPhone and stuff just make it like you know. Unfortunately, they get you every time. Scott Wilkinson, watch Home Theater Geeks in our club. If you're not a club member, this is a great chance to join Club Twit for $7 a month. You get that show. You get Micah's Hands on Macintosh. We do a lot of club only exclusives. You also get, of course,
iOS Today.
All of iOS Today. You also get all of our other shows ad free. And it's $7 a month plus the Discord. There's so many benefits, and it helps us immensely. Twit.tv/Club Twit. Thank you, Scott. I'm
My
looking
pleasure.
Forward to
Happy
your,
New Year, everybody.
Your Darth Vader march on the tuba. Not the vuvuzela, though. No, just the tuba.
Not the vuvuzela.
No, please.
Oh, man.
Here's an illustration from one of our AI tools.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah, I don't know what the... he's got a samurai helmet.
Yeah, so
he's got
that's because
samurai helmet.
OpenAI won't generate Darth Vader specifically because of copyright. So
copyright,
this is
of course.
A tall, imposing figure wearing wearing futuristic dark armor.
Somewhat like
and
Darth
playing Vader. A tuba. And playing man, I love that.
The Force
that
is strong.
So awesome.
Tuba. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson. Home you Theater bet. Geek.
Thanks so much.
Oh, you did.
You bet.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see the name.
Ah.
So,
'twas me.
If you ask it for Darth Vader, it won't give you
It won't
anything.
Give you Darth Vader. In fact, I one time got in trouble, so to speak, because I kept trying to get it to generate Shrek things. And then finally it said, no,
Stop
I'm not going to do it. And then I tried to change it. I was like, can you generate a green ogre? And it says, it quite literally said back to me, it doesn't matter how you word it. I'm not going to generate a
and
Shrek.
And they say ChatGPT's not smart. AGI, here we come.
I kind of got a little scared at that point. It was like close tab.
Yeah, we're watching you, Sergeant.
Oh, dear.
Just knock it off.
It doesn't matter how you word it.
Knock it off. You can ask for it any way you want to. I'm not going to give it to you. 888-724-2884 is the phone number. Lines are open now. Please, Mr. John Ashley, producer man, pick us another caller.
How about an email?
Oh, I forgot we have the
ATG at twit.tv.
Full box of emails. Let me open one and see. This comes, from John Matthews. It's a long one. Should I read the whole thing?
Three paragraphs.
Dear Leo and Micah, I have a question you have probably already addressed a past episode because I can't believe I'm the only one with this problem. Ah, you're not. My father passed away a couple of years ago, left behind a Samsung tablet I would like to give to my daughter. Problem is, when I try to restore it, Google now wants to verify it with a phone number or previous email account, which I don't have passwords to. He's searched the web and he finds links to paid products to unlock it. He says, I'm leery for paying for one of those, and I don't blame you. I think you're probably right not to. Is there a free way to do this? He says, I understand Google does this to prevent theft, as does Apple. In fact, I think Apple, I'm surprised that Google does it too. I would imagine Apple's even more draconian.
Yeah,
you have to have a death certificate.
Yes, it gets very...
You have to have a proof of purchase.
And not only that, but in many cases, it depends on who you talk to and if the person has indicated in some way that they are willing to give up the device, right? Like that they've got a legacy contact in place or
will?
Something like that.
Oh, if you had a legacy contact.
Yeah.
So I did do that.
Yeah. That is what makes it more likely because that's kind of your pre-consent.
I don't know how to do it with Android. I have never encountered this.
I think that you are smart and wise to have not paid for a service because I cannot speak to any of them working. I honestly, the thing that I hate about questions like this is because of the answer that we have to give in many cases, which is it's all about how things should have been done or what way it could have been done.
Yeah, but this was years ago.
Exactly. And so there's nothing
passed.
There's nothing to do
so
there.
I think you should be able to factory reset it. This is the thing Apple prevents. Mm-hmm. Because Apple does this whole thing where they make, you have to activate an iPad with an Apple account, and you can't reset it without access to that Apple
account. Correct. That's why they have you turn off Find My iPhone, because that is essentially the switch that says, keep this locked. And so if you ever have traded in an iPhone, you'll know that they will have told you hundreds of times to turn off Find My iPhone. That disables activation lock and makes it possible for that device to be restarted, refreshed, renewed with someone new.
Yeah.
But yes, with a Samsung tablet, I don't know.
There are ways to hard reset Samsung tablets. And I think that this would mean presumably it's locked, right? Mm-hmm. So he doesn't know the numbers to get into it. And if you knew the numbers, then you would just go to settings and you'd do factory reset and you'd be able to reuse it. But maybe this is locked, in which case you need the hard reset, which includes reinstallation of everything, including, the firmware. Looks like you do have to be able to factory using Android recovery. This is from Samsung's own page. So I will put this in the show notes. A Samsung tablet hard reset is carried out when the settings need to be altered due to improper functioning. That, the thing is really dead. You press the power button, you hold it to switch it off. Volume up and home buttons, and you hold them for some time. And you keep holding you wait for the Samsung logo to appear, and then you release the buttons.
Oh.
Then you get into Android recovery.
Did you see that from Scooter X?
Okay. Now this is, so Scooter X just sent us a link to how to get a Google account recovered.
Yeah.
That's not, I don't
That's
think,
true.
What he's trying to do.
If it's Samsung.
He did mention Google, but I think what he just wants to do is get the tablet wiped so he can give it to his daughter, right?
Yes.
If you want to get in the Google account, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Right. If he could get access to the email where this code is being sent or whatever, and it's tied to the Google account, that could be helpful. But it's tough.
So it's unclear from the email. He says, I want to pass it on to my daughter, which... And he's trying to do a factory reset, which tells me he doesn't care about the Google account. That's a separate matter. You should be able to reset that Samsung device from the Android recovery screen. In other words, without logging in, and then you can wipe the data, a factory reset it. I don't think you'd have to re-log into any accounts. I think you'd now basically have a brand new tablet. So let me put this link into our show notes. This is actually from a website called techculted.com. I'm not familiar with it. Betty Torres. But I will put this in our show notes. And I think that's the hard reset. And I think the hard reset should work. It doesn't work on an Apple because in order to reuse that tablet, you have to log into the same Apple account that bought it. That's why when that happens, what you do is you go to Apple with the death certificate and the receipt. And you say, see, I own it. This person's passed. And then Apple can actually bypass their protections. That activation lock is probably there for a good reason, but it causes significant
number of headaches,
problems
for
people. Especially because somebody's just passed, you don't really want. Let me do another one. That was fun. One more. Do you mind?
I don't mind.
Come on, let me do it.
I don't make the final calls, per se.
Really? You like this haircut?
I do.
I feel like I look like that guy in Peaky Blinders. Like I'm going to throw my hat with it.
That's a good
thing. It's a good look.
That is a very
That's a look?
Good look.
Yeah.
You want to look like that guy in Peaky Blinders?
Do you want to look like Cillian Murphy in
yes.
that show?
Fresh.
How do you
fly.
Know? Yeah.
Yes.
But it's like I got all this hair on top and then nothing on the side.
It's still good.
It's a good look.
It's a good look. Okay. Yeah, you know, this is the problem is I'm an old guy. I'm not stylish. So I have to trust you young guys.
Yeah, I promise.
Uh-oh, absolutely. From Matt in Wisconsin. Possible phishing attack. Tweet, tweet, tweet. Hey, guys, my folks call me. Oh, yeah. Okay, I guarantee you it is. My folks call me about a questionable Facebook Marketplace interaction.
Oh, no. Don't do it.
They had that I'd like some advice on. Maybe your listeners could benefit as well. They listed an item. Okay, so they were selling.
Okay.
Someone responded right away from the interested party that they sent them a verification code to prove they were not scammers. Okay, they responded right away. They were interested. Then they received a message that they had sent from the interested party that they had sent them a verification code to prove they were not scammers. Unfortunately, so it's hard for me to understand this. I think his parents, they asked the parents to send them their Facebook verification code.
Oh.
Unfortunately, they did. So now the scammer, I guess. So I'm not sure exactly from Matt's prose. They listed an item, and someone responded right away that they were interested. Then they received a message from the interested party that they had sent them a verification code to prove they were not scammers. Ah, so they're saying, I want to buy your refrigerator. Get ready, because you're going to get a verification code from me.
Yeah, that
Except
proves.
It's not from them. It's from Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when they got the code, his parents, they gave it to the scammer. So what the scammer has done is, it's fairly clever, is imply that Facebook code really came from them. And you could, it's okay if you give it to us. Their parents did. That's a verification code. He says, I advise them to change every password immediately. Then to call a credit bureau and put a freeze on their credit. What other advice would you recommend, or did I induce panic for nothing? All right, well, let's walk this through.
Oh, wow. No, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Oh, okay. You found an article about it.
Yeah, so what they're doing is they're going through Facebook Marketplace where you've got typically less tech-savvy people.
Right.
And they are setting up a Google phone number.
Yeah.
And they're
That's
using...
That's how you reach me to buy my refrigerator.
Yes. And because they don't want that number to be tied to them, the scammer... They're having it sent to, they'd ask you for your phone number, Leo.
Yeah.
The code would be sent to you, your phone number.
Yeah.
You would give them the code, and now they can activate that Google Voice number. It's tied to your phone number, and any scams that they do will seem like they're coming from you.
Oh, so they're
not
trying them. They're not trying to get in your Facebook account.
No.
They're getting your phone number, the special phone number you set up. It's always a Google Voice number?
According to Michelle Mason with the BBB, they're really doing is trying to get the Google Voice number that you can retrieve from Google, get the code, and then have access to that. What that means is at a minimum, they could use your number that is associated with your account to pull other scams.
So job one is discontinue that number.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw it out. Let's see, if you've used that number for anything else, you'll want to change that verification number. Chances are you haven't, right? Because you set it up just for the Facebook.
Right, exactly.
So Really what they're doing is they're getting a verified Google phone number that they can use to then scam other people. So you immediately want to disassociate yourself from that phone number, right?
Absolutely.
And if Google has, they may have with Google Voice, they may have a reporting mechanism that says this number has been used to scam me or is a scammer has this number. Please, you know, put a red flag on it. That's the first thing. It doesn't sound like, Matt, you needed to change your passwords or put a credit freeze on. Not that those are harmful things to do. They're just time consuming. Changing your passwords is fine.
Yeah.
As long as you use a password manager and you're not just changing it to something like your birth date. It's not a bad thing to put a credit freeze on your credit accounts. In fact, you know, I recently bought a new car and they did a credit check on that. You probably, you know, and you rent an apartment or whatever, they're going to do a credit check. The credit freeze prevents those credit checks from happening. It also prevents anybody from applying for a credit card in that with that account. So TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax, the big three, and there's a couple others, by the way, all allow you, and by law, this is free, to freeze that account, to say, no, don't give anybody any information. They don't want to do this, by the way, because that's how they make money, is by giving your information to credit card companies and others. That's how come you get all those solicitations in the mail. As soon as I froze my accounts, nobody's offered me a credit card ever since. I don't understand why not. So it's harmless. It's free and harmless. It's a little time consuming, but it's harmless to freeze them. And unless you are, and I bet your parents are older like I am and probably are not applying for credit very often.
Right.
So then it's no harm, no foul to freeze it. All of them are now, thanks to federal law, required to give you a fairly easy way to unfreeze it. You could do it permanently or temporarily. I'd recommend temporarily. Say, unfreeze it. When I bought the car, I said, unfreeze it for the next 5 days and then freeze it up again so that they were able to run a credit report and then get that information back. But after that, it's frozen. So it's, again, frozen. There was only one company, TransUnion. I had a little trouble. Or was it? No, I'm sorry, Experian. I had a little trouble doing a temporary unfreeze. These guys really don't want you to do this. They hate this. But the federal law requires them to do this. So I think, especially since your parents are older, a credit freeze is not a bad thing to do.
Just in general.
I have a credit freeze on all my accounts.
I actually do too, and I'm a youngster.
Yeah. You just have to remember that before you apply for rental or anything where they would do a credit check.
Yep. Just remember to go back and...
That you unfreeze it temporarily. What I did is I asked the car salesman, well, who do you use for the credit checks? He told me I unfroze that account temporarily, and then now it's frozen again. So it's a little inconvenience. It's kind of like two-factor authentication. So you haven't, Matt, done anything wrong.
No.
It's okay.
Yeah, and I've got some good news, too. We'll link to this page. Google has a specific page to help you reclaim your voice number. So if someone else ends up taking your voice number, linking it to something else, you can get it back. There's a series of steps you take.
Yeah, in fact, we'll put that link on Google Voice on how to reclaim your voice number. So they link. So in this process, they link their real number with a Google Voice number. Mm-hmm. And that's what you don't
want. And then, if investigators were going through this, then they'd see that Google Voice number, reach out to Google perhaps, and then find out, oh, that's linked to Leo Laporte. Leo's the one that's been doing all these scams against people. No, he got scammed when he was trying to sell his old vehicle on Facebook Marketplace.
Right. So that's Google Voice help. We'll put this. You could show the screen there. We'll put this help note into the show notes. That's really interesting.
Yeah, because this is a, like multi-level going on.
They're so good out there at tricking you.
They really are.
A variety of fashions. And good on you, Matt, for helping your folks. And good on them, by the way.
For reaching out to you.
For reaching out to you. Because I think sometimes people are embarrassed.
Absolutely.
If they think they've been hacked. And they kind of don't want to tell anybody. Mm-hmm. And if you have a technically sophisticated person in your family, tell them. And of course, because you're watching the show, you're that person.
Yeah. And if you are the technically sophisticated person, think about what we just said and tell your folks, tell your friends, tell them, hey, I'm not ever going to judge you. You know, if you,
it happens
you can
all
come
the time.
To me. It happens to people. It's okay.
Tell them when it happened to you.
Yeah, exactly. That is a great way to do it. Yep.
Gosh, you know, this thing happened to me and I almost responded. The big one now, I just got a text message. this morning. The big one now is, of course, these text messages that imply you know somebody. Hi, you free this weekend to have dinner?
Now, that was me, Leo.
Yeah. Well, it's an area code I'm not... You know, this is the problem. It could be.
Yeah.
But it's a number that is not in my phone book, and it's an area code I didn't recognize. So what I would do if you have an iPhone is report junk.
Yep.
And then what it'll do is it'll delete it, and it'll report it not only to your Apple, but to your carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And they will probably make that phone number unusable. It's kind of a sad story because these people who are doing these, it's called pig butchering. The people who are doing this are often themselves victims.
Mm-hmm.
In countries where it's not well enforced, like Myanmar, they get these compounds, these dormitories. They get trick people into going there for a job. Mm-hmm. Take away their passports, basically lock them in. And then their full job is scamming people until they can figure a way to get out. It's really terrible. So everybody's a victim in this one. Don't respond. There's no point in responding. Just report it as junk if you can. Even that doesn't make a difference, by the way, because they have lots of numbers. They move through numbers quickly. That's one of the reasons this scam happened. All right. Let's take a little tiny teeny weeny pause for reflection. And then... let's continue on with another question.
I'm going to pick up on a phone caller.
Phone caller. Don't forget to hit *6 so that you can unmute yourself as you are brought live onto the air.
U.S. holiday sales online in the month between November 1st and the end of the year, $222 billion. Dollars. That's up 5%.
I always wonder how they know that big
number. Make it up. Hi, what's your name and where are you calling from? Adobe does
this. This is John.
Hi, John.
From Texas.
Hey, John, welcome. Texas. What's up?
All right. I just want to propose. How are you doing today?
Good start. Did you have a question?
I just want to.
Yes.
Okay. I want to propose it by asking, are you familiar with the Target pregnancy scandal that happened a few years back?
Yes, actually. It's not really a scandal, but it's an eye-opener. Young woman who had not informed her family that she was pregnant started getting solicitations from companies for things that a pregnant person would want, like baby furniture and diapers. It turns out Target, because they're able to, you know, remember when you get a Target card, why do they give you a discount at any of these stores? It's because then they can attach your phone number. They can attach your phone number to your purchases. And I guess she was looking, she didn't even have to be buying these things, by the way. Apparently in many of these stores, cameras are watching you, and AI has just made this better. This happened years ago, but AI has just made it better. And they notice she might have wandered down the diaper aisle and lingered. Now, here's a person, here's a young woman with no children lingering in the diaper aisle. Maybe she's going to have a baby. Either that or she knows somebody. So this is called data analytics. Target's not the only company that does that. In fact, I would say every company does this. Predictive analytics. The story was told in a book called The Power of Habit. And it was also in the New York Times. It's a fairly old story, but I think that it's really mostly good, helpful for you to understand that people can watch everything you do. Remember, we were talking about that Cox Media Group website they took down. They put up for a few days and they took down immediately. That implied that they could listen to your private conversations and then target you with advertisements. There's some question about how effective that system was, but it did resonate with people because they thought, I knew that Alexa was listening to me. I knew my Google Home was listening to me. I know Siri, but they don't need to listen to your conversations. That's actually kind of a hard way to do it.
Yes.
They just need to look at what you're doing.
Absolutely.
It's all behavioral based.
And it's when there's another person in your house that, because I've got a lot of privacy protections in place. When there's another person in my house that doesn't have all of this extra tech that I put in place to stop cookies and all this other stuff. And it's funny because the conversations we have, and then I will be scrolling through Instagram and see ads based on something that they had said.
And yeah, my daughter did the same thing. She said, I was talking about guinea pigs and all of a sudden I see ads for guinea pigs. It's not the conversation.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's the behavior.
It's the behavior. Somewhere at some point you looked up something.
We forget.
Uh-huh.
First of all, it's not just looking up things. There's all sorts of things we do.
Absolutely.
Literally going slower in the diaper aisle is an input. And the thing is, this was a long time ago. This is before we had these powerful AI capabilities and data recording capabilities and cameras everywhere. Now it's trivial. Why do you think Amazon built a store where you walk in, you give them your handprint, you walk in, pick up stuff and go? Well, yeah, it's convenient. We did it for the user. No, they did it because you can go into a store and they could see everything you pick up, look at, even stop to look at.
Exactly.
Because they've got cameras and sensors everywhere. That is hugely valuable information. It's being collected about us all the time. There are companies, many of them, literally more than 100 companies in the U.S. alone, that buy this information from TV manufacturers. Why do you think Roku has a camera in the TV and a microphone in the remote control? This information is valuable. They sell it on to data brokers who aggregate it. That's really when it becomes really valuable, and sell it on. Now, you may say, well, golly, we ought to stop this. And I think we ought to stop it, too. And I think the United States Congress ought to do something about this, except every time they think about it, the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA come to them and say, gentlemen and ladies, please consider law enforcement. They buy this information from data brokers, and they use it in law enforcement. There will never be, I'm now convinced, a law in the United States to prohibit this kind of collection of information and sale to data brokers, because it helps law enforcement. And law enforcement has a very powerful lobby in Congress. Will the EU perhaps do something about this? They've been a lot more aggressive about privacy. I don't know if it'll help us in the U.S., but it is important to remember you're constantly giving them information. Just by going into a store, you're giving them information. When you get one of those supermarket cards, you're giving information. And the decision that you have to make is am I getting enough savings at Safeway or Target by having that card to justify what I know is happening, which is they now know everything I ever bought from them, right? And they sell it on. And they've connected it to me. So whatever you do, don't slow down in the diaper aisle. Who's next?
Got some more phone calls.
All right. Here we go. Next caller.
Remember to press *6 to unmute yourself.
Hey guys, can you hear me?
Yes. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
I am Rob. I am from Vacaville.
Just up the road a piece. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, hi.
Are you excited about...
I'm hoping you can help me.
Are you excited about the billionaires buying up big chunks of Solano County so they can turn it into their private utopia? Are you excited about that?
We're hearing a lot of that out here, you know. I sort of think it'd be a good idea.
Hey, it's undeveloped.
I'm not a farmer, so I don't.
Yeah, that's who's making money on it, right? They're buying the land from farmers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't really say I'm not in their shoes, but it seems like sort of a good idea to me. I'm not against it.
If they want to, why not? I would move in, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be really
the problem
nice.
With utopia. Is it's only one letter different from dystopia. So maybe no, it's three letters. That's three letters. More than one, three, it's two. Anyway, it's a few letters different. What can we do for you, sir?
Yes.
Well, I'm hoping you can help me. I've got this dilemma here. There's four components to it. I've got a PC and an iPhone and Outlook. I don't use the cloud, and I've been using iTunes to synchronize the Outlook calendar and contacts with my iPhone, and it stopped working, and I've tried all sorts of stuff to debug it. Well,
you were using iTunes on your computer,
and it let you sync your Outlook calendar?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, that's...
Up until a certain point.
Yeah, they stopped supporting that. Wow.
Yeah, it was working fine for a long time.
Yeah.
And then two updates ago,
So it just stopped. So really what you want to do is you want to have an Outlook calendar that is synchronizing between your computer, your Windows computer, and your iPhone.
Yeah.
But you don't want the cloud involved.
Or I'll just give up Outlook. Yeah, I don't want the cloud involved because I was a counselor and I have people's names on there.
So you need privacy.
But I'm thinking maybe I could drop Outlook and do a PC app on my desktop that has contacts, that has calendar, and then a similar thing that I can sync on my iPhone that will synchronize more easily.
Now I get why you were doing this. Yeah, no, this all makes sense. So you have you have private information in your calendar that you don't want any big tech entity to see, but you do want to be able to synchronize, which means the synchronization can't go through the cloud, which, by the way, it's doing right now, I think, with Outlook, but Moxnix. We won't worry about that. Your Outlook calendar is, I believe, synchronized up to your Microsoft account, unless you're not using a Microsoft account. Anyway, you want a calendar app that's private, that's local only, and that you can then connect your phone. Kind of like the old days with the Palm Pilot, where you would dock the Pilot, you push the button, and go, and then it would copy it all down to the Palm Pilot, and then you'd be synchronized. And that is really a nice thing to have. What would be a third party?
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, that was the good old days.
I'm having trouble thinking of anything off the top of my head.
I don't use Windows enough. I want a local only Windows calendar program. Almost everything is now in the cloud, and that's the problem.
Right. And a context program too.
Yeah, of course. That's a really interesting question. You can sync Outlook without logging into a Microsoft account, but that does not seem like Outlook is going to constantly be trying to get you to use OneDrive, and it's not worth it to do that. And same thing with a Google Calendar. So what we want is a standalone calendar app for Windows, and one that will synchronize to the phone manually via a computer.
Yeah.
I mean, Mozilla's Thunderbird has contacts and calendar.
True.
I understand. Actually, I respect your desire to do this because I suspect there's a lot of therapists, attorneys, physicians who are actually probably violating HIPAA because they're keeping this information in the cloud. And you have to be very careful. HIPAA requires certain privacy things. Let's see. Wow. This is clearly there should be a market for this. There's one way I know you could do this, and that is to use a local NAS, a network attached storage device, by basically making your own cloud. Oof. So there's software called Nextcloud, or you can use, I use Synology. Synology has a calendar and address book program, which you could then, so you're storing it, you're in effect making your own cloud. You're storing it on a box in your closet that is a hard drive, that you could then use on your iPhone. You can synchronize with your iPhone and your Windows machine. It would be, I think that's the best way to do it with Nextcloud or a Synology, which has its own apps. Then it's never sent to the cloud, so there's no risk of it ever kind of exfiltrating. Almost every calendar program I know of uses
syncing that's online, right?
Yeah, uses a cloud. Whether it's Google and you know, mostly Google. Now the problem with doing this is it's expensive. You have to buy this hardware. But there are easy ways to do it. If it depends how sophisticated you are. For instance, you could run Nextcloud on a Raspberry Pi with a small storage device. Let me show you the program Nextcloud. This is an open source basically cloud that runs locally on-prem. Now, you could go on cloud with it, but don't, right? That's exactly what you don't want to do. This was originally created as, I think it was called OwnCloud, and then they forked off of it. Now I'm a little worried because it looks like NextCloud has now gone commercial, which would be kind of too bad. Let me see what OwnCloud is up to. These are local cloud solutions.
Yeah, so in effect, it's not the same thing as when we say the cloud, right?
It's a local. Well, a cloud is just a computer somewhere.
Yeah.
You don't want to use somebody else's computer somewhere. You want to use your computer somewhere.
Yeah. I'm more just trying to get the words to sync
So that. Well, cloud kind of implies that it's in the on the internet.
It's not
this
something
is, in
you
fact,
have control
not on
over.
The internet.
Yeah, this is something you have. You actually cases. Have control over.
It looks like both NextCloud and OwnCloud have been purchased by larger companies, which is Kite Networks now owns OwnCloud. NextCloud is owned by somebody. This is kind of annoying. How about
you said you did say, well, this is probably something you considered. You said you were a counselor. Not
yes,
currently
we
are.
Recently retired.
Yeah. Maybe this is the opportunity to start a new calendar. That's
take the calendar that you have, put it somewhere local. Yeah. If you no longer have this requirement for privacy,
the world would be a little easier for you.
Now that you mention this, I have to ask my therapist, where do you store
I was gonna ask
all
my
your
therapist
information?
The same
I
thing.
Bet you most therapists.
Maybe they just say appointment with client. They don't have, our name in it or whatever.
Well, my therapist uses an online billing system. Mm-hmm. So I get charged and pay automatically online. So I know all of that information is on the internet. So you have to trust the companies that you're using that they provide security. And nowadays we know that that's, often a false promise because so many breaches. This is a really good question.
It really is.
If you can get a Palm Pilot, I think you're set. The problem is that the Apple device, Apple's moved more and more away from connecting to anything. In fact, we've for a long time talked about the rumor they're going to just get rid of ports entirely and do it all wirelessly. And so the easiest way for Apple to do that and the most profitable is for you to use iCloud.
Yeah, but you can. If you had existed in the Apple ecosystem, this would actually have been a little bit simpler because Apple does have these on my iPhone, on my iPad, on my Mac accounts that don't sync anywhere. But because you're trying to keep the calendar that's on your Windows machine in sync with your calendar that's on your iPhone, that's what makes it difficult to do this without involving the web somehow.
You stumped us.
Well, I suppose Apple is pretty secure. Shall I trust them?
Yes, but the problem is Windows.
And also, according to what I was reading, Apple specifies that iCloud is not HIPAA compliant because it would have to go through a whole process to gain that HIPAA compliance. And
very few cloud providers
It says
now you're not bound by HIPAA. I don't think. Maybe I don't know. I don't know if therapists or counselors are, but certainly.
Yeah, we are.
You are okay. So and even if you weren't, that's a good higher standard that you would
just
want
to
aspire
have that standard,
to.
Yep.
Boy, that's a great question.
It's a very good question.
I think the only way that I can be sure that you could do this is with your own hardware. Get a Raspberry Pi with a hard drive or some inexpensive. There are a lot of inexpensive cloud appliances. And the idea, let me just give you a couple of names. The idea is you're storing it locally and synchronizing to it locally so it never hits the cloud ever. A lot of companies make these little, inexpensive devices that you can plug into your network.
If the Microsoft account is Office 365 or Microsoft 365 Enterprise, it is HIPAA compliant.
Enterprise.
Yeah. Well, it says Office 365 or Enterprise.
Yeah.
So you would have to have the Office 365 subscription at the very least for
and
that to be HIPAA compliant.
And then there's probably some hoops to jump through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my concern would be it'd be easy to accidentally make it.
Undo. Yeah,
undo what you've done. I think you want to buy a little device that you just, it used to be a lot of these. This is all kind of old fashioned because everybody's just says, well, fine, we're going to use the cloud. But there used to be you could buy a lot of little devices you'd plug into your network and then would have software running on them that could do your calendar and contacts. And it's network-based. And you would use, there is a standard. The good news is there's a standard for this called CalDAV and CardDAV, D-A-V. And CardDAV and CalDAV are standard ways of synchronizing calendars and contacts. And so most of these appliances have CalDAV, CardDAV compliant endpoints that you then, your iPhone, which also supports CalDAV and CardDAV, could log into and synchronize with. Your phone would think I'm synchronizing with the cloud, but what it's really doing is synchronizing with a hard drive in your closet. I'm going to have to do some research on there's so many of these, or there used to be so many of these. I don't know what's out there right now. Anybody have a good suggestion for a, let's say, under $100 cloud device? That would be the way to do it. Now, they're still trying to provide you with Microsoft-compatible, HIPAA-compatible solutions in the Discord. I'm pretty sure such a thing, there are plenty of ways to do this, but with your own hardware. Are you willing to do your own hardware? How committed are you to this?
I'm not sure. I'm not that familiar with NASA's. What kind of software would I run on it that I could...
All of these NASA's would have
store my data.
Yeah, all of these NASA's would have a... this is a very common usage. Would have an address book and a calendar, piece of software that you could use. Some of them you don't,
and then there'd be a synchronization.
And then you'd synchronize, and so it would give you a URL that you would put in your calendar on your iPhone and your calendar and your Outlook calendar that you would synchronize with, and it would be stored locally. That's one of the ways I think of doing it. Everybody in the Discord says, "Oh, you know, unless you're super hardcore." Just use Microsoft Office if you're an Microsoft 365 subscriber. You're compliant. Hmm. We've got this. This is from the HIPAA Journal. Is iCloud HIPAA compliant? No. Most aren't.
And then I could.
Then you could do the syncing between.
And then I could synchronize Office 365 with the iPhone.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you would log in.
You could actually have Microsoft offers Outlook for the iPhone.
Yep, you could. Yeah, if you wanted to keep using Outlook, you can.
And that's free on the iPhone.
Yeah, or you can set it up with your, you know, iPhone's Mail app. All of that would be possible. Yep.
So hey. I'll put an article here. Thanks. This is from skiff.com. How to make Outlook or Google Calendars private. That talks about using privacy settings to make sure that you're still trusting Microsoft or Google or Apple, you know, to do this right. But you can, in all of these cases, you could do privacy. Oh, I see why this is on a website called Skiff Calendar. They offer a secure calendar program with end-to-end encryption. That would be the way to do it. So this is skiff.com. That would be the way to do it.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, Skiff, they're probably playing. Yeah, privacy first, end-to-end encrypted email, but they also offer end-to-end encrypted calendars and address books. I guess you could use something like ProtonMail. There are a lot of these encryption email providers. You know, I use Fastmail for my calendar, but it isn't HIPAA compliant. But if you went to somebody who was encryption based like ProtonMail.
Yeah, my therapist was using that.
Proton?
Not Proton, but was using an encrypted thing. So yeah. I always had to go to the site and log in order to.
Yeah, it's a little annoying. Yeah. But
it's
private. And I think that's really important. Exactly. I think I honor you for considering the privacy of your clients. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, good question.
And thanks for your time. I really gave you a curveball here.
Well, you didn't. This is something I think everybody should think about, to be honest. More and more, we're going to really think about how much of our... This is what this show's been about today, all day. How much of our information do we want to give to the big tech? You know, my decision... It should be an explicit decision. My decision is, I'll let them have it. I don't care. So what if I get ads? And, you know, I'm going to get ads anyway. You know, and I don't think I'm going to be the subject of an investigation by that federal arm of the U.S. government, but So, and I'm not a Chinese dissident. So, you know, you have to consider your threat level. Some people just want to be private because they, rightly so, they just say, I deserve privacy. And you have to, I respect that. Absolutely. For me, it's too hard.
Probably is for you too, right?
Yeah.
This is, you know, the world we live in now. We're not private anymore. It's interesting. Privacy in some respects is a modern concept. You know, in the Middle Ages, we all slept in the same room together. There was no privacy. You can imagine. Use your imagination. There was no privacy. Yeah, 23andMe, they have my spit.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, the doctors in those days were drilling holes in people's skulls.
Yeah, there was no medicine either, yeah. By the way, trepanning works. Don't knock it, you know? Hey, thanks for the call. Really good question. I don't know how much we helped.
Thank you.
But these are the issues that you have to solve, yeah. I think probably I would use Microsoft 365 and just keep doing that and use Outlook on your phone. And then make sure you look into the settings that make it private. That's probably the easiest thing to do. Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum. All right, Mr. John Ashley, producer man.
Let's do a voicemail.
Oh,
ooh,
I remember those
yet.
If you call us 888-724-2884 during the week, you can leave a voicemail like the one we're about to hear, and we'll answer your question.
Hey, tech guys. This is Will from the Woodlands, Texas.
Hi, Will.
I have a Pixel 5, which I thoroughly love, and I just got the notice that I will be getting Android 14. Woohoo! My question is, does that mean Google will be supporting my phone for one more year? Please let me know, and I'll be listening to the show. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
I think it does. Yeah?
Yeah.
Which is a surprise, because that's a pretty old version of the Pixel.
Pixel 5, yeah?
Let's see. Pixel updates 5, 5A, 4A. Let's see. You are going to get guaranteed Android version updates on the 5 till October of last year. So that's an interesting question. Really, the version, Android version updates aren't the ones you care most about. Those are feature updates. What you care most about is security updates. And that is patches that will make that phone secure. So they're guaranteed or did guarantee 3 years from when the device first became available in the Google store in the U.S. Now, the good news is Google has upped that number.
Yeah, clearly.
I think 7 years now. But you bought it back, you know,
before they
2018.
Said.
So yeah. They said October 2023. The fact that they gave you, that's a really interesting question.
I wonder if maybe you have a Pixel 5a. But if you don't, this is just, they're saying, Google is saying, we guarantee it until this date, but hey, maybe they're continuing to do it even after that date. It's just not guaranteed.
I'm going to get updates till 2030 on my Pixel 7.
I will. Or 8, rather. That's pretty impressive. Yeah.
So that's the new rule on Google's phones is 7 years. And I honor them for that because that's ridiculous. The Apple has never said how long they'll honor iOS, but they keep it going pretty long time. It's hard. The reason is it's just hard for a company to take all of these different devices and keep them up to date. I'm really puzzled. The fact that you got Android 14 means they have gone beyond the date they promised. I would guess that you're going to continue to get security updates. Now, you'll know. In fact, you would know by now. I don't know when you left the voicemail, but the January Pixel update went out last week. So if you have the January update, good news. Yeah, I think you're going to continue to get them, buddy.
Yeah, and just then, not guaranteed at this
and
point.
And then, yeah, I think that's the thing. They're out of the goodness of their own heart. They're giving you updates. I would just keep an eye every month. You should get an update usually the first week of the month. You should always check. And if the day you stop getting updates, I mean, I give them a couple of weeks. But if you get to the middle of the month and you haven't gotten an update for that month on a Pixel phone, you're probably not going to get one. And now we know that their goodwill has expired, and it's time for a new phone. The good news is, you know, in a couple of months, you're going to be able to see the 8A, which will probably be a great choice. And they still sell the 7A, which is also a great choice. These are inexpensive upgrades.
Absolutely.
That are better even than your Pixel 5.
And the trade-in stuff, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Here we go. Let's see what somebody in the Discord has found a link.
Love it when they do that. Thank you, Discord.
Thank you. Well, it's Scooter X.
Of course it's Scooter X.
It's always Scooter X. Always the X, man. Google Pixel update for 2024. We have provided the monthly software for 2024, all supported devices, running Android 14. So that's good. Now, there's two weasel words here, supported devices and running Android 14. You got halfway there.
There it is.
Yeah, they're pushing it
out. See, I wonder if you've got the 5A.
He's got the 5A, don't you think? Yeah. The fact that you got it means you probably have a 5A. That's interesting.
And 5A, yeah, goes till August of this year, so.
You got till August, yeah.
So not great question. A year, but yeah, almost a year.
Let's do another one. I can't remember. Do we have to do anything?
Let's do one more pause. Okay, that's a good pause. Good job.
It's the pause that refreshes. Yes. For people watching the video version of the show, nothing happens. But if you're listening to the audio version of the show, sometimes an ad will be inserted against your will, which could be painful. So it's just good I warned you. Now what do you want to do, Boy Wonder?
I want to pick up.
Oh, sorry. Producer man. I tried. Producer man, John Ashley.
I'm going to pick up another phone.
Here we go. To the phones.
He says, I'm a man.
What is that? That's a reference for sure.
Look at that little kitty.
Is this Star 6?
Douglas is kitty. Hi, Douglas. Yeah. Star 6 to unmute. Aww.
Dear caller, once you have joined, remember to press star 6.
888-724-2884.
Sometimes the caller has set down the phone. Ah, welcome. Hey, what's your name and where are you calling from?
The Fumbling Fingers, Paul from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Fumbling Fingers, Paul from Columbus, Ohio. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Well, this is a little weird, but what's new? I'm trying to help a friend out, and she's not the greatest person on a computer. She had a PC that died, and I was trying to talk her into getting a Chromebook, or at least a Chromebox, because she's got a good, nice monitor.
Yeah.
But she had never heard of it before, and nobody in her family ever heard of it before. And I said, yeah, do they listen to as much of this tech stuff and read stuff like I do? Probably not. But anyway.
I'm surprised. So, I would have thought the Chromebook would have better brand recognition, but I guess not. Okay.
Yeah, but
she's heard of Google, right? Has she heard of Google?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So what you say is it's from Google.
Yeah, if she's heard of Google.
Yeah, that'll help.
Yeah, right. So she bought an iPad 9 refurb.
That's not a bad choice. That's a good choice.
Yeah. And so what I'm trying to, so unfortunately it's only 64 gigabytes, but what I thought she could do would be to run, or like she wants them to write a letter or email or something, she can do that directly from the iPad onto Google Mail.
Mm-hmm.
Or if she wanted something like Word, she could use Google, whatever their doc thing is. Yeah. I don't recall the name.
Google Docs, yeah.
Google Docs, I guess. And it's still in the cloud. She's not going to be using up that.
Right. Actually, that's true also. I think on the iPad, on the Mac, it's true of Apple's own word processor Pages, which she should like a lot. It's a beautiful word processor. On the Mac, it stores it in the cloud. Does it do that on the iPad as well?
You have the choice.
You could turn it on.
Yeah.
So, she can actually, much like a Google Chromebook, store all of her work in iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she may have to buy more iCloud storage after a while. Because Apple only gives you a small amount to begin with, I think 5 gigabytes.
Right. Which,
by the way, I think Apple.
Can you also use like a?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, can you use a thumb drive or some external memory device?
Oh, not on that iPad. No.
On the 9th gen, you could, but you'd have to buy a special dongle for it. So what you do is there is a Lightning to. Oh, goodness. I can't think of what the exact one is called.
I think it's the camera connector.
Yeah, it's like a camera connector.
Which gives you a USB port, and then you can. I wouldn't recommend. This is going to be too complicated for her. 64 gigs is more than you think. Unless she's doing photos on there, she's going to have plenty of room for Word documents.
Yeah, and even if she is doing photos, if you've got the iCloud storage.
Yeah, if she, I think in general, if I would let her just use it. If at some point she says, hey, I'm running out of space, then you say, okay, let's buy you, and it's not expensive, 200 gigabytes on iCloud. I think it's, how much is 200 gigabytes? I think it's inexpensive.
$2.99?
Yeah, it's a couple bucks a month. And then, and you tell her, and by the way, this is great because it's backed up. It's safe. Even if you lose your iPad, you won't lose your documents, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so she can use the pages and keep it simple.
She'll like pages.
Turn it on to say.
And you might, if you want to turn it to more of a computing experience, she can get a keyboard for that. I don't know if the that iPad has a case with a keyboard. It does.
Yeah.
And then it's really just like a laptop. And honestly, an iPad and a Chromebook are comparable in security. You're not. That's good. Both of them are much better than Windows. Which, and this is the sad thing, is most people like her, that's all they've ever heard of. And so they just get another Windows PC. And that's really the worst possible choice for her.
Just, that's what she was going to do, and I at least talked her out of that.
Yeah, thank you.
And it was a money thing, too.
Yeah. Well, an iPad's a good choice. Yeah, I think a refurbed iPad, that's a good choice, actually. She did a good job.
What about connecting the iPad to her existing large monitor? Like I say, it's a nice Dell. It's about 27 inches, I think.
With this one, it's going to be just as complicated to try to connect it. Once again, there is a special adapter, but it will require it has to have power connected to it. It's called the Lightning Digital AV adapter, and so you have to plug in power to it, and then HDMI comes out of it, and then you plug it in, and it's not, arguably, it doesn't add much to the experience. I almost feel it's not worth, you know, futzing about with. I know that then means, yes, the monitor is not being used, which is kind of a bummer, but I find it's more trouble than it's worth, because you still need to tap on the screen that is the iPad. You know what I mean? So you'd have to be looking back and forth between the two screens. It doesn't let you create a second display. It is just mirroring the display of the iPad itself. It's almost not worth it to again, deal with.
I understand she says, well, I got this beautiful monitor, I can't use it. But she may be very happy with the iPad. I mean, honestly, for many, many people, even that smaller iPad is really fine.
Yeah. In fact, I think Apple has sold so many of these ninth generation iPads. I've had so many friends and family members tell me they've gotten this ninth gen iPad over the holiday season. It's a really good iPad. It's still within, like, Apple is still selling this iPad, so it's still got a long support life left. Yeah, you've got multiple choices for accessories. I've posted some links. We'll include a link to that smart keyboard that Leo was talking about that lets you, if you wanted to, use an external keyboard with it. But this is still very powerful as a device. Yeah.
Smart keyboard's expensive. It's $159, which, now you've got basically a laptop.
I had told her she could do that.
Yeah, and you don't have to get this fancy smart keyboard. You can spend less money and just get any Bluetooth keyboard.
Yep,
and
that's
use
true.
It with that, and get a little stand. And in fact, if you put it on a stand so that it's raised up, she might say, oh, that's nice. That works. That's like a monitor.
Yeah.
And then it has a little Bluetooth keyboard. Mm-hmm. No mouse, unfortunately. It's all touch. I think in the long run, people get used to touch, and then they prefer it. But initially, it might be a source of confusion.
And what was the brand? I know you put the
Well, Apple's the brand Apple makes this. It's Apple's smart keyboard for the ninth generation. So Apple makes it. It's a little stand, lets you tilt it up. You can have the keyboard underneath. You can have the keyboard on top. This is by far the best solution.
Just because it's made by the company. But as Leo pointed out, if you found a Bluetooth keyboard from any brand, and you connected it using the Bluetooth settings in the iPad, you can also get
a Bluetooth keyboard for $12.
Yep.
So if price,
just make sure it doesn't require a dongle for the Bluetooth connection. Right. That's all. Right.
Yeah.
I think she's going to
stand or a cover.
Well, that's the thing. This keyboard is a cover as well, and that is
I mean, that's how I do it. I like that. Yeah, I think it's a good way to
all
do
in it. One.
It's just expensive. You know, it's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, super.
Hey, I think, you know what? She did, in some ways, a better thing. As long as she's comfortable with, you know, the problem with iPad is it's iOS. Now, if somebody's used an iPhone, they'll feel very comfortable with it. But if they only use standard computers, it might be initially a little bit odd to them. It's not like a standard.
No, she does have she's got an SE.
Oh, perfect. Phone. So she already knows how to
use it.
The iPad's just a big iPhone, right? She already knows how to use it.
That's what I told her.
Yeah. I think that was a good choice.
12 from Apple also, so that'll be a good thing.
Oh, she's great. So. She'll be good.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, pleasure talking to you. Thanks. Have a great day.
Talk again.
Our second call from Ohio.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's right.
It's nice. It's Ohio Day. Ohio. On the Ask the Tech Guys show. Remember, we are on Sundays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 to 2 Pacific. So if you want to call us live, call between those hours, that three-hour window. But you can always call that phone number in the week and leave us a voicemail, 888-724-2884, much like this one.
Oh, sorry about that.
Wake up, boy genius.
Hi, Leo and Micah. My name is John from Indianapolis.
Hi, John.
A couple months ago, I made the switch from AT&T to Mint Mobile.
Very good.
I loved it. Also love paying a smaller bill.
Yes.
However, in the last month and a half, I am getting spam calls like crazy, upwards of 20 to 30 calls a day.
Holy.
So I'm not answering my phone at all anymore. I called Mint, and they said they are not part of using Stir Shaken.
They're not.
So I'm looking for advice on what I can do to get these Mint or the calls to stop. Mint suggests changing my cell phone number. However, I've had the number for over 20 years, and I'd rather not change it. Yeah. I've tried RoboKiller; that did nothing. So hopefully, you guys can give me some help.
Indianapolis, Ohio, of course.
Yeah, right. So we should mention Mint's a sponsor.
Yes,
and we like them because it is a very low cost sponsor. But apparently, they do not block spam calls. Now, they're going to have to, by the way. Yeah. Incidentally, Mint is in the process of being acquired by T-Mobile. At that point, they will block spam calls. They're on the T-Mobile network now. I don't understand how they're not a part of Stir Shaken. I thought they were required to be by now.
That doesn't make sense. But while Leo's looking, I want to talk a little bit about using RoboKiller, because there are a lot of settings that are involved with making RoboKiller work. And I ended up having an issue and had to switch to a different one when I was using RoboKiller. But one thing that people I've noticed, if they use this, forget to do is that on your iPhone, you need to launch the settings app, you need to tap on phone, and you need to scroll down until you see a setting called silence unknown callers. You need to then turn on silence unknown callers.
Yeah, I do that anyway. Now, that's problematic because, like, my doctor calls from an unknown number, so some people are not going to get through.
Right. If you were expecting a call, you got to toggle that off. But that setting actually has to be on in order for those blockers to actually work in the first place. So you need to make sure that's on if you're using RoboKiller. I recommend Hiya, H-I-Y-A, if you're using and you've had trouble with RoboKiller like I did. It is another service that does that, and I had success being able to block the callers. It is interesting, though,
legally required to. You know, the FCC said that even small providers with fewer than 100,000 subscribers were required to use this Stir Shaken framework, which is, by the way, a spam blocking framework, as of 2022. So I don't know how Mint Mobile is not required to do that. Let me just look this up. Looks like maybe on June 30th, they closed a loophole. So I think by now.
Yeah, I wonder if the person was just not. Because, I saw the deadline was June
30th, 2022.
Yeah. For non-facilities providers.
Yeah, this is a Reddit post. Let's look at what Wired says here. Yeah, this is a protocol. What Stir and Shaken does is it's a dual protocol. Stir, one of them, I can't remember which, I think Stir is run on the end of the originating calling company, your phone company. Shaken on the other end, Stir authenticates the caller. It says, yes, we own this phone number. It's coming from our network. Shaken on the other end says, I'm not going to accept any calls that aren't authenticated. Is this one authenticated? And so it's a handshake between your phone company and the originating caller's phone company to make sure that it's a call coming. It's not a spoofed number. It's a call coming from within their network. Now, the reason that works is spammers don't want to use real phone numbers. They don't want to be traceable. So they're never going to use an authenticated phone number. They use made up phone numbers. So I am surprised that it doesn't work on landlines. It only applies in the U.S. He may be getting calls from outside the U.S. They're trying to shut down that bottleneck, as that loophole rather, as well. Let's see. Here's a response from Mint Mobile, FCC response from Mint Mobile. Let's see what they say. That's kind of a shocker that they don't support that. This is from August 3rd. So this is of 2022. This is in response to that June requirement. Back when Mint Mobile was not part of T-Mobile.
Yeah, it's a lot to read through.
This is data retention. This is not germane, I don't think. So it bothers me that they're not supporting it, but I have not had that experience. So having had a Mint Mobile line for years, so I'm not sure why he's getting that. I just don't know. So use that tool, that one that you mentioned. Does
Hiya.
That work well?
Hiya works quite
Hiya.
Well. Hiya. H-I-Y-A works quite well. It is unfortunate, as we've pointed out, that for whatever reason, they're saying they're not using that.
I think they are by now. I think they have to be. So I'm not sure why you're getting 20 calls a day.
Yeah.
That is absolutely a problem.
Yeah. And it means whatever you said, you switched from AT&T and it wasn't happening there. And your phone number is the same that you've had for years. So something had to have changed on switching to Mint Mobile, where Mint is not protecting in the way that AT&T was.
Make sure you add your number to the Do Not Call database. That is of minor use, but at least it helps a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess you can use Hiya.
Yeah.
Boy, that is a problem. I mean, I have to admit, I have, for the same reason, maybe I am getting that many calls, because I've always used that high silence, calls from unknown numbers. I don't want to, if I don't know you, I don't want to hear from you.
If I don't know you, I don't know you.
And in fact, you know, I think one of the reasons maybe people aren't paying too much attention to this is, who takes phone calls anymore?
Exactly.
Now that I have a fade, I don't take phone calls anymore.
That's all it takes.
I have moved on. And then if you had a Pixel, you're right, Joe's pointing out in our Discord, if you have a Pixel, there's call screening features in the Pixel are fantastic.
Well, an iPhone has a new one too, a new call
Do
screening
they?
Feature.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's live voicemail.
See, this is why I should be listening to iOS today. If you're a member of Club Twit, only $7 a month, twit.tv/clubtwit, you can hear the brand new iOS today. You've changed it a little bit.
Yes, it's a little bit shorter. Yeah. And we've shaken up some we've shaken and stirred some of the different segments, and we're going to be doing a really cool new thing. I've already reached out to some app developers. App developers are going to be coming on the show on occasion and quite literally telling us about their app, walking us through, showing how the developer who made the app will show us how to best use the app. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity for folks to see
that.
Their favorite apps actually buy from the creators who made them and how to use them, how to make the most of them. So
that's fantastic.
We're looking forward to that.
That is fantastic. Club Twit is, of course, the best way to support what we do. And as we go into the new year with so many exciting new technologies coming along, especially AI, mm-hmm. Apple's Vision Pro later this month, we have a job to do. And I think we do a pretty good job of covering these technologies without fear or favor. We are very careful about being honest, high integrity. We don't have investments in these companies. And I think you can trust our judgment. So I think it's really important that we keep going. We'd love to have you be part of our growing community. Club Twit keeps us alive, keeps us creating great content for you at $7 a month. You can pay more if you want. There are family plans. There are corporate plans, too. twit.tv/clubtwit. Of course, you get into our Discord, too, which we talk about a lot. That's a really nice community. Who should we do next, Mr. Senior Show Producer Man?
All right. I know Douglas.
George, Douglas really wants to get in. He's waving. He's pointing. He's pushing his kitty out of the way. We've talked to Douglas before, so Douglas, you should know we try to get new callers on first, but we're going to welcome Douglas on because he's been sitting there all show, very patiently, patting his kitty. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Loki left.
That's your kitty's name, Loki. That's Do you Loki, have other Marvel Comic Universe kitties?
No, we have we have Linux, Starbuck, and Chewy. So this is just to let you know, this is Linux.
Aww. Oops.
Yeah, so she was a stray and she looks like a tuck, so I named her Linux.
Yeah, I'm a fan of black and whites. We have two black and whites at home. We love.
So I was gonna with all your other comments on the privacy. The phrase I tell people is everywhere you leak, the world holds a bucket.
Ooh,
so
that's a very good phrase. I like that.
The one that I really did not, I'm still not sure if it was just a coincidence or if it was real. My wife has a brain tumor and had a biopsy surgery and, 3 days after the biopsy surgery, we got a call from someone selling funeral pre-planning.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
I
hope it was a coincidence. Yeah. But, I mean, I think funeral pre-planning is a good idea, but I was kind of questioning why somebody was calling me about it.
I have to admit, hospitals are kind of notorious for selling your information on when you have a baby. All of a sudden, you get all these solicitations, and it's because of the hospital. Told everybody you had a baby.
Yeah, I don't know how they find stuff out because, I mean, we had a grocery store that we went to, and when you checked in, they would give you coupons. And right after my wife became pregnant, we started getting baby coupons. Yeah. So I don't know how
they figured that out. Somehow they know.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is I have a Walmart account, and when I go on my Walmart account, everything I've purchased in the store is listed because they linked my credit card.
That's right.
That I used in the store with the credit card I used online. They have a list of everything I bought.
Yeah.
Anyway, that wasn't really the reason why I called.
It's none of my business, but what's the prognosis for your wife? Is she doing okay?
She's had the tumor since 1999.
Oh.
She had a ventricular shunt put in, which drains fluid from her brain. The tumor hasn't changed in 24 years.
Oh, that's good.
But the problem is she also came down with MS.
I'm sorry.
And she was okay for several years. The last 2 years, it's gotten worse, and now she's in a nursing home.
That's a really tough one. I know all about that. And
so I went through like 8 months of trying to get Medicaid approved and provided over almost 1,000 documents. I gave more information to get Medicaid than I did to get my national security clearance.
Of course you did. Oof. Of course you did, Douglas.
So well, anyway.
Hey, best wishes to you. Lots of hugs and love. That's a tough one.
So that's not the reason I called. But anyway,
no.
I just finished listening to this week's episode of your
security. Mac podcast. Oh, Mac. Okay, I was going to say security now because I thought Doug, you'd be really interested in what Steve said about the Apple flaw.
I watch Steve.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't want to because it makes me scared.
It's terrifying.
Anyway, fair enough. Yeah.
And I'm always preaching to my friends that Alexa is not really listening to you, but they don't believe it.
No.
But anyway, it was kind of interesting. You were talking about the Internet Archive. And there's a few things I really like on the Internet Archive. The one thing is, they have a lot of old TV shows and stuff.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
The one in particular is, a show that was on in the late 70s. That not a lot of people have heard of. It was, it starred Andy Griffith and it was called Salvage.
Ah, don't know that.
And, the thing is that you can catch the intro to, they've got all the episodes here on
438,000 TV episodes, 24 of Salvage.
Yeah.
With Andy Griffith.
All the episodes, on here, but the premise of the original movie, I don't know how YouTube plays over the
Please
Zoom
don't
Connect.
Play it.
Yeah. Don't? Okay. You can find it here on YouTube, the intro. So basically the premise of the original movie was that he's a junk dealer and he wants to go to the moon, bring back stuff from the NASA landings and sell it.
Oh, my God.
Which now would be illegal because they're considered heritage, World Heritage Sites.
Right.
But I was just like,
what a great concept for a TV show.
Yeah. And then they have some clips from the end of the movie where he brings the rocket back and he's landing it vertically. And I kind of wondered if Elon Musk ever saw the show.
Let me just show you a couple of frames from this, because the one on Internet Archive has been AI enhanced. And it looks like it's been AI enhanced. Andy Griffith looks like AI Andy Griffith.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is a wild. But remember, this was probably a 400 line scan from NTSC. Yeah. So in order to get this to look high quality, they had to put it through some processing. Wow, that's wild. But you know, what an interesting premise for a TV show.
Yeah, I was like maybe like 14 years old and I loved it.
I don't remember it, but what a great idea.
Yeah, a lot of people don't remember it, but it's really cool. The guys on This Week in Space remembered it.
Of course they would.
Naturally.
Yeah.
But it's just such an interesting show. And then there was one episode where they were rescuing a bomber that he flew in World War II, and they picked up this guy who was on the island who thought World War II was still going on, and they convinced him. Anyway, so they're about to land in Tokyo, and he turns around to him and he goes, one question, you sure Japan lose war?
That's a little joke based on the fact that after World War II, in a couple of locales, they found months later Japanese soldiers who didn't know the war was over.
There was one guy, it was like in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they had
still
to bring
hiding his, in the jungle.
They had to bring his commanding officer out to get him to surrender.
Wow.
But it was it was a really cool show.
Yeah.
But
Selfage. I don't know if I want to watch this AI version, but I have to tell you, you're never going to see this on Netflix or anywhere else because it was so low quality that nobody would watch it. And they couldn't, if Netflix would get complaints if they showed it. So shows like this are probably lost forever, except for the fact that the Internet Archive exists. And thank God, Brewster Kahle. I donate monthly to the Internet Archive.
It's there's always the famous Star Wars holiday special.
Which George Lucas desperately tried to bury, but
he wishes he could find every copy and burn it.
It will live forever. It was notorious. It was notorious.
Yeah, the best quote about the Star Wars holiday special was from, and this was at the time it was shown. One reviewer said it was like it was written by cocaine, not by somebody on cocaine.
No, just cocaine just itself.
By a sentient bag of cocaine.
That's actually a pretty good quote.
You know, and it was funny because around the time of the last presidential election, Mark Hamill tweeted after one of the debates. Mark Hamill says, "This is the worst television I've ever seen, and I was part of the Star Wars holiday special."
Good old Mark Hamill. I love it.
I keep wondering though, with Disney wanting to get, you know.
It should
money.
Be on Disney Plus. Let's come on. Let's do it. Next Christmas. Let's re-release it.
Yeah. Well, next Life Day.
Yeah. Next Life Day. That'd be better. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, when I was just at Disney and I bought a Life Day ornament that they sell. So,
so remind me, this is because they don't want to say Christmas. They call it Life Day.
It wasn't even Christmas.
It's a Wookiee holiday.
It was a Wookiee holiday. And like the first 30 minutes of the show are completely in Wookiee.
Wow.
Nobody speaks all in Wookiee.
That's not much of a concession to the English speaking audience, is it?
Yeah. And then at the end, Carrie Fisher sings.
Yeah. Also, not a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And his Chewbacca's father's name is Itchy.
Itchy Baca. It's a pleasure talking to you.
His son's name is Lumpy, and he was actually in some of the extended universe.
I've always thought, and I know you'll get some hate for this, Star Wars is a children's show. It's a children's movie. And this just confirms it with lumpy and itchy.
Yeah. What I thought was funny was when I was in sophomore in college, I was in an English class, and the teacher starts describing a certain type of story.
Yeah.
And she goes,
the heroes.
There's a farm boy who's going out with a pirate and a wizard to rescue a princess from a dark knight. And she says, "What does it sound like?" And I'm thinking to myself, "This sounds like Star Wars."
Yeah.
And she goes, "It's Star Wars."
Yeah. But it's also every epic story ever told.
Yeah, it's a classic hero story, but it's just funny.
It's like hero's journey. Yeah.
You know, that's what one of the characters from the movie said. Oh, well, we might as well have been flying around in a pirate ship. I just want—I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to share that about what's on Internet Archive, and
I love the I love the Internet Archive. And it's a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining us. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, Club Twit member.
Thank you.
Thank
we know
you very much.
And we appreciate it. We're very grateful.
So thank you for support.
One more thing: have you taken the survey yet?
No, I have not.
Don't feel guilty. There's no pressure. But twit.tv/survey24. It's just
I didn't know the survey was out yet.
I'm sure you've done it in years past. We do this every year. It's really the only way we can ever know anything about our audience. We've shortened it considerably this year, so it shouldn't take you very long. We, look at what you want to know. Are you married?
I'll have to go and take a look at that.
I'm already 8% done. So it's very easy this year. twit.tv/survey24. We try to get a significant portion of our audience to take this, because then it helps us both understand what we're doing and how it fits your needs, but also tell advertisers. Well, our audience is between the ages, 43% between the ages of 18 and 24, or whatever it is, and that way they feel a little bit better.
I'm way above that.
They don't have to spy on you in the
I'm turning 58 next week. So.
Happy birthday!
One question for Martin. Not Martin.
Micah.
We used to have a guy named Martin Sargent.
I was thinking. Do I need to resubscribe to iOS today now that the change, or will it automatically? I was subscribed under the.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, you will. If to get the Club Twit version of iOS today, you have to resubscribe.
Oh, I'm already under the Club Twit version.
Oh, then no. Then you're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, there is no the public iOS feed. You probably put something on there that said resubscribe.
Exactly, and we did that as well. So it's still there. It's still active. But in order to see new shows as they're released, then you need to go into your Club Twit membership and subscribe.
Okay. As long as I'm subscribed under the Club Twit, I don't have to again. Okay. Yep.
Then you're good to go.
We appreciate your support.
Yes, thank you so much.
That's good. I put a thing about iOS today on my blog, which I don't update.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It was a couple months ago when you were begging for support.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
My blog, which it's running on AWS, but it's themindofferg.com.
And you're Ferg, of course.
Ferg, yeah.
F-E-R-G.
I post different things there. I've posted a bunch of things for shortcuts, iOS shortcuts.
Oh
nice.
We'll have to check video that out editing then. Stuff. And
So when you got your security clearance, what was that for?
That was back like almost over 30 years ago. I was working on the Trident 2 guidance system.
Oh wow.
And it was a low level security clearance, but still they looked at everything. I did think it was funny when I was coming out of college, I interviewed for a position that required a top secret clearance, and they gave me the paperwork and they wanted to know every organization I had belonged to for the past 15 years.
Wow.
I was 22.
Since you were 7. Sure. Why wouldn't they?
And then I joke with people though, after I left that company, I went to work for a company that made computer telephony hardware called Dialogic. And so I said, I went from working on guidance system for nuclear weapons to helping some people make auto dialers.
Hey, I want to let you know that I'm getting a certificate warning on your site. It says your certificate is for www.themindofferg.com. It's not valid for www. It's only valid for themindofferg.com. Now, I don't.
Okay, I use Let's Encrypt, so maybe I need to fix something.
Yeah, just make sure that it supports both. www and okay. not www.
It's probably just a simple.
It's an easy thing to
file to edit.
Yep.
So thank you.
Hey,
I never go to www. Yeah, I never go to www. So.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And look at this. Support one of my favorite podcasts.
Thank you so much. That's very.
Thank
kind.
You for doing that. We really appreciate it.
No problem. I don't really post enough on there, but.
No one does. So everyone on the blog says that, by the way. I just want to point out. That's the universe.
Yeah, I'm running.
I had to write more.
Yeah, I wound up having to. It got shut down for a while, and I found out it caught a virus.
Oh, no.
I was running Drupal. I'm running Drupal still, but I had to update it. I found out it had a virus when I started backing it up, and Microsoft Defender started flagging some files that I was downloading. So.
Yeah. It's a challenge running a website. You got to keep up to date all the time. Hey, pleasure talking to you. We got to run because I got a show to do. Thank you. Oh,
thanks so much.
By the way, if you haven't listened to Security Now yet from last Tuesday, do. Steve Gibson talks about the big Apple CVEs. There were three or four of them that the folks at Kaspersky figured out had been used to hack the phones of Kaspersky employees. Apple has patched it since. But Steve's conclusions after looking at the various exploits were that this was actually a backdoor built into the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And in all likelihood, built into the iPhone at the behest of and provided to a U.S. Agency, probably the NSA. So, I mean, we don't know for sure. Apple, of course, is not addressing it. It has been patched. That's the good news. But it is an interesting story, and it raises the question, was Apple forced to put a backdoor in the iPhone for the last 4 or 5 years by a U.S. Security agency? And, you know, we don't know for sure, but my conclusion is yes, that seems to be the case. That seems the most obvious case. Steve agrees. Listen to it. It's a very interesting show. And we'll talk about that on Tuesday on Mac Break Weekly. You will be back for iOS Today and for Tech News Weekly on Thursday.
Indeed.
And next Sunday for Ask the Tech Guys, as will I.
Good.
You're not going to be alone. Thank you all for joining us.
Yes, thanks so much.
Micah Sargent.
And Leo Laporte.
And we'll see you next time on Ask the Tech Guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, a bunch of game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow is a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.